instructions, I think.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
It's been a while since we've met.
A little while.
And I know Mr. Nixon had asked a couple times in the fall if we could meet. I'm like, guys, please let's go through Menhaden and striped bass. And so, you know,
made,
we got through.
Made this happen.
Huh?
Made this happen.
Made it through, yeah. We got through. So it's, so we're hoping we can, you know, have a few more meetings and be, you know, more productive than we were with you guys last year, because it's like, you know, you guys, I'll admit, kind of took a little bit back burner last year with us trying to deal with a lot of the other issues. So it's, welcome
so
you.
Also, we haven't had, as far as I can tell, a whole bunch of issues in crashing
yes.
the world.
Yes. So that's a good thing. Status quo is good, in our opinion, right now, because some of the things we've had to deal with. We've had some changes here at VMRC. Rob retired, you know. You all know that by now. He came right on this step and told us he was leaving and told us he would be gone in a month, and we all kind of gulped. And, you know, that was in September, and we somehow made it through the fall, which was good. And I got promoted to chief, and they were very kind to me, and they let me hire two new deputy chiefs, which was fantastic because it allows us to make sure that somebody's always in the office if I have to be at ASMFC or something like that. So we have Adam Kenyon, who's been here for how many years now?
Almost 10.
Yeah, it seems like for 10 years he was running our biological sampling program. He was recently promoted to head of our plans and statistics section. So it's good to have Adam on board because he's, you know, has a good knowledge of the history of this agency and how things work. And we have Shannon Matheson, who comes to us from, she was in New Jersey for 2 years. She was a researcher there, but before that she was at Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. She was the research coordinator there, so strong background in stock assessments and the process with ASMFC. So I'm really pleased to have them both on board because it makes my life a lot easier. So when I was told I was going to get two, when I got hired, I was supposed to be the second deputy and walked in the door and Joe Cimino said, I'm leaving in 4 days and you'll be it. So I think, you know, it's been a while since we've met, so if the, you know, board would like to introduce themselves to us and to the audience, we'd appreciate that at this time. So, thank you.
All right, Ty, you want to start? Tell them where you're from, too.
Push this?
No, yeah.
I'm Ty Burns, and I'm from the Eastern Shore.
I'm Ernie George from Commercial Grabber from Rappahannock.
Marshall Gosh, Dave Charles.
Ed Tanker, K. Charles.
Mark Sanford, Windhaven, Virginia Beach area.
J.C. Hudgens, Commercial Waterman, Matthews.
Johnny Graham, Graham Rollins, crab processor in Hampton.
Pete Nixon, I'm from Norfolk.
How about the staff that didn't introduce themselves?
Sure. Shannon Madison, I am the second deputy chief.
Everybody.
Jennifer Farmer, regulatory coordinator. She's here today. She handled our crab agent application. Yep, I threw them below. And Alexa Kretsch, I work on blue crabs, and I'm coordinator for CMAC. You all should have received a couple emails from me.
Thank you.
I'm Kenyon. I'm the other second deputy chief. So I think in front of you, you have minutes from the last meeting all the way back in May. So if you want to look those over. And Mr. Tankard, if you want to take a motion on approving or amending those minutes.
Yeah, so Alexa sent these minutes out by email previously, right?
Correct.
So everybody's had a chance to look at them.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion to approve the minutes as submitted.
Second. All right. All in favor, say aye.
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 Hold on a second, Chris. I hear you vaguely. There you go. I just turned the volume up. Chris, can you hear us okay?
Yeah, I can hear you okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. Good to have you with us, Chris.
And sorry, I'll be there in a few minutes.
Okay.
All right. All right, so were there any nays on that motion? Seeing none, the motion's approved. So, new business, adoption of advisory committee bylaws. Everybody got, I think, probably some bylaws too. And so we ought to talk about it. You want to maybe
So if you read through the bylaws, I don't think there'll be anything in there that's earth-shattering. I think when we went through our committees over the last year when Rob left, we had some low attendance across some of our committees. So we tried to standardize some expectations across all of our committees. They're very basic things. I think one of the biggest things on there is 2-year term limits for committee members. So, but you can be reappointed. It's more of a jumping off area. We found that we had some committee members that hadn't shown up in a year. So it's really setting down some basic guidelines for both new members and people who've been on here for a while. So you can kind of see what the function of the advisory group is and where we're trying to get and what the role is. So if you'd like to adopt those bylaws, they are we're looking to make really the same bylaws across for our FMAC committee, SMAC, the shellfish, finfish, and our AMAC as well.
Okay. So how many members are we supposed to have on this CMAC committee?
So it varies. There is no set amount that we are supposed to have.
According to this, it is
15 to
20.
13
to
20.
13
to
20
is the max.
So we're going to try to keep 13? I mean, is that the goal?
We're
okay.
At 14 currently.
14 yes. Now? Okay.
Mm-hmm. It gives us some leeway, too.
The reason why I'm asking is 50% for the quorum. You know, if we want to vote and make a motion, you know, we've got to have that many. So I was concerned about the size.
And it's a follow-up question. Would you like to stay at more close to 13, 14, or would you rather see more? That's something I think
well,
we just talked about.
Considering, you know, how many people attend, you know, that's going to be the key to it, I think. If we can get 13 and get 10, you know, 9 or 10 coming out of 13, I'd probably have a better chance in, you know, having a larger amount and trying to fill that with at least 10 people. They got 20, so you'd have to have 20 to
perform. So you're comfortable with those limits then?
13, so, yeah.
Okay. Any other questions or observations?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. Yes, I hear Mr. Moore.
About
NGOs?
I didn't hear what you said, Chris.
Correct.
We didn't specifically say NGOs, but I think we reworded it to say exactly. It said other interested in conservation, others interested in management and conservation of Commonwealth Virginia fisheries. So we didn't.
Okay, that's great. I just wanted to make sure we added that.
Yeah, it was in there. It's just we didn't specifically define NGOs, but it says the conservation. Anyone interested in the conservation and management of our fisheries.
Knowledgeable of
the fisheries in that regard.
And what section was that?
Great, thank you.
That would be Article 4, Section 1.
The copies that were on the front table are updated from the ones that you received in email. We had a couple last-minute changes.
Okay. Did you want to point out where those changes were so that we...
Article 4, Section 1.
Article 4, Section 1, and I believe Article 3, Section 17, I believe is also new.
That was it.
Yeah, just those two items.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Is it my understanding that we're going to settle for 14 members on the board? Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Right.
We're not changing the bylaws. It's still going to be the set 7 to 13 to 20.
It's still going to be from 13 to 20.
Yes, sir.
All right. My next question is, we've done it in the past, use of proxies, Section 13 states that use of proxy in the absence of a committee member is prohibited.
Yes.
In the past, we've done that. Someone will come and replace someone, so I want to make sure everybody understands that. It's Section 13. So if one of us can't show up, we can't have someone else come take our place.
Correct.
So everyone understands this.
I mean,
do
you think that's a good idea, Pat? I mean, the reason why I asked, when I first started 6 or 8 years ago probably, I'd done some proxy work for Ken Smith because he was in our association. So, I mean, we were we talked about it. I think it helps establish a quorum a lot of times, you know.
I think the problem was, this came up last year with a lot of our committees, not as much this group.
Right.
So we would show up at a meeting and all of a sudden it would be like four or five proxies. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, somebody would show up specifically for that meeting. Yeah. And that's not the purpose of a proxy. It's like, you know, they would show up because they had an agenda-driven item. And so I would prefer if we keep it with no proxies and work on a case-by-case basis. And if, you know, for some reason you cannot make it, you know, and we've done some exceptions for FMAC where, you know, somebody couldn't make the meeting who was always there, and if he couldn't be there, he called in, but he was actually doing something else for the state. I think he was up talking to legislators. We allowed someone in for that one meeting.
And I think that's a good thing that's changed, too, is the call-in. You know, when you've got an opportunity, if you can't make it for whatever reason, you got a prior commitment, you know, you can sit down at your phone and listen.
We do have YouTube. All our meetings have YouTube availability now, so if you can't make it here in person, there is a call-in, and you can watch the video live on YouTube.
And that counts as attendance, too. So if you can't, it does work really well. A lot of people are taking advantage of that, so that if they can't make it, you know, they can go home and watch it live, or they can actually watch it on their phone and, you know, listen in. And so there's a lot of opportunity. So that's why we really feel we don't need proxies on a regular basis anymore. So.
Okay.
Chairman.
Go ahead, Chairman.
I was on the FinFish committee for, I don't know, long as I've been on here, over 25 years. And I asked Commissioner Bowman quite a while ago, I needed some relief. I didn't have enough time to do all of it. And he appointed Scott McDonald. But a lot of times in the fall, he'll be packing fish late. And he's asked me several times, you know, to sit in for him. We're going to run into that situation here, too, especially if you start having these meetings at 4 o'clock.
Well, I mean, we're open, you know, open for suggestions on that. I mean, because depending on who you talk to, some people feel, you know, the watermen want to come in early because they've been working all day. 4 o'clock works better. People who have other jobs, they can't get out
until
6.
I understand all that, but, you know, in the spring, you've got people that are involved in shedding crab.
Yeah.
You just can't run off and leave that if you don't have a lot of help. Mm-hmm. If you have somebody that's reliable, that's familiar with the what's going on here, I don't see a problem with having a proxy.
Yeah.
I mean, you're really going to limit yourself on quorums because everybody that's here that's been here before knows that sometimes we only have a half a dozen people here.
Yeah. But again, you can call in and you can do it on the internet. So, I mean,
you can't do it on the internet if you're doing something else.
That's true. Okay, I'll give you that.
You know, if I'm on a forklift loading a truck, I can't do it.
I'll let you know, Scott was really good at attending the meetings. I mean, he was at almost all the meetings.
It just happened, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know it was tough for him to get here, but he was here, and he was a very active member for all the meetings.
Go ahead, Mr. Cox.
As Pete said, we've both been here a long time, 25 years, and there has been probably 25% of the meetings I've attended in 25 years. We haven't had a quorum, and I don't see a problem with if you can call. I can call. I might be sick. I may have to go to the hospital. It's any reason whatsoever. I don't see why I couldn't call the day before the meeting because I'll know beforehand if I can make it or not. And it could come down that I can't show up and we're one short.
Mm-hmm.
But if I called today and told you, look, I'm not going to be able to make it tomorrow. I'm going to send someone to take the place. And if it happens to be that you do have a quorum, then the proxy could sit there.
Or not vote.
You understand?
I mean,
what
it could be in discussion and not vote.
Because of the past history of having a problem getting enough people here, if you don't get enough people here, we can't do absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
I don't want to take that chance on doing that again because I've seen it happen before when four or five of us will show up and then at the VMRC meeting, they'll say the crab committee wasn't enough members there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only problem I have is if someone would call in and say, look, I can't make it tomorrow. And it could be if one of us is missing tonight, that'd be a problem.
Well, if you look at the bylaws, there's a section here that the commissioner has authority
catch up
to pretty much do what he wants. So if you want to call in and have me go to the commission and say, can he have a proxy for this meeting, we can, you know, do. If you have a choice, either we accept this with no proxies, or we basically say we'll do it on a case-by-case basis.
But one of the things I'll bring to attention is when, like, if I were to call in and say I'm not going to be here, say I asked Tim to take my spot, that would be on the record. Now, I continue to do that. That's not working.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, sometimes, you know, somebody fill in 3 or 4 meetings in a row. I don't agree with that. But.
And I think it'll, and there are circumstances. I mean, there are going to be situations someone may have a medical issue where they can't make meetings for a while, and we have to adjust for that.
Okay. Well, maybe you can say something, you know, that over a period of 100 meetings we have in a year, how many proxies did you have? You can't do that but X amount of times. But we've always had a problem getting people on the board to show up. We've always had that problem.
Okay.
Well, I'll just mention 2 things. I think, one, if you don't have proxies, it puts pressure on the people who have been appointed here to step up and be here when they know that Mr. Nixon's got something going on. And when you start out proxies, everybody can get pretty loose. That's what I'm going to suggest. And then 2, it sounds like it has been a destabilizing force where you don't have the common courtesies and committees that can speak and act together in a reasonable fashion.
And these bylaws, we've tried to write these bylaws generic for all of our, you know, committees instead of having specific ones for each. So, and we have had some problems at FMAC in the past, and I think it was, I can't remember, probably November of last 2018 when Rob O'Reilly said, you know, with the commission's, you know, approval that we weren't going to have proxies anymore.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I understand that concern very well. Maybe we could do something like put a limit on them to a year or something like that.
You mean for each member? Each member could do it twice in that period of time?
Yeah.
But I'll say that, but it seems to me what Pat is telling us is that, say, you wanted to have a proxy, I think you could call here to the commission and say, I'm sending Fred Jones.
Well, that's what we've always done in the past.
The commissioner is going to okay that.
Or not.
But I think as a bylaw, we should say no proxies. I think it just gives us more cohesiveness than allowing people to willy-nilly bring in a person.
True.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to notice that 51% quorum, that's pretty generous, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I know our association, we have to have 66 2/3%, so that should help, you know, as far as on the quorum side of it.
You know, and the commissioner, he appointed all of you.
You know,
not either Steve Bowman or John Bull, some of you, maybe even Pruitt.
Yep.
There we go, see some hands going up. So they appointed you because they wanted you to be here. And, you know, but it's, you know, we understand circumstances are going to come up, and, you know, I think we prefer that it says that it's prohibited and deal with it on a case-by-case basis. Like I said, if there's, you know, something happens and you're going to have a medical reason why you can't come for, you know, 4 months or something like that, we might consider something differently.
Okay.
And what we're looking for is approval of these, you know, any changes you want to do.
What do y'all think? Can we approve as is? Can I have a motion for that?
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion to approve bylaws as submitted with no change.
Second.
All right.
Marshall, you're going to break the record for motions today.
All right. All in favor.
Everybody don't say nothing.
All in favor. Say
aye.
Any opposed? All right.
When you sign this and hand it back, or?
I think we're
no, they're just our copy.
Okay.
So a couple other procedural things to try and make meetings go a little bit smoother. In the past, sometimes where you walk into this meeting would be the first time that you saw information. We're trying to do a little bit different. So before the meeting started, probably about a week ago, you received information on agents. The point of trying to send everything early is so that when we come to the meeting, we can try and solve or come to some kind of consensus on it. In years past, what has happened is we'll come here, we'll see the information the first time, we'll say we need to go back and talk about it, so then we need a second meeting, and it kind of belingers the problem all the way through. I mean, agents, what we're talking about tonight is a good representation of that problem. So one of the things we're going to try and do is send information out ahead of time. I think in the packet that you got, we put together some expectations for 2020. I think what we have planned is about 4 or 5 meetings, depending on how to get through these. But you can see on the board in front of you, those are the issues that we would like this committee to come to a consensus on in 2020 for implementation in 2021. None of those items are on the agenda tonight. We just want you to see them. And before we talk about them as a committee, we'll send that information out. And we'll also ask for feedback as staff. So if you read through the information that are something you would like to see, we can try and provide that so that it's ready for the discussion and action at the meeting versus not coming to consensus and having to have a secondary meeting. So one of the other issues, this is under new businesses came up that's not on your agenda, would be a request that is going to public hearing in March in front of our commission, would be a prohibited area in front of the Joint Expeditionary Base at Little Creek Fort Story. The Navy contacted the commissioner and law enforcement and asked for their help. There was a large amount of crab gear in that area during live firing range that was really causing them a problem conducting these exercises on large scale, and was also causing a problem with vehicles coming in and out and getting entangled in this gear. So you can see this is the original area that the Navy was asking for. Very large area, almost 10.5 square miles. We sat down over the course of the last month and really dove into what they needed. So we came up with a compromise. The one area that we are going in front of the commission in March for a public hearing is the Wysoski drop zone that mirrors, we thought it would be easier to use lines that already exist on map and GPSs, so it mirrors Anchorage Area A, that deep water area off of Cape Henry where large ships are. It is a live firing range out there, so it is a public safety, so they're just asking us to mirror some of the restrictions they already have. And the second area, this is the compromise they came, instead of having that large 10.5 square mile area, what they're really concerned about was those amphibious vehicles and training going on and off the beach all the time, getting entangled in that gear, and also having to cancel any kind of live fire training or training because there are people actively fishing or actively crabbing in the area. So the area in red you see there, that's the underwater demolition area that's already closed to all recreational and commercial activity. The large red area on your right, that's a small arms firing range. That's where they do live arms firing. That'll be closed for commercial and, I shouldn't say commercial and recreational fishing. Let me do the opposite. That'll only be open to recreational fishing on the weekends. Other than that, it'll be closed. So that'll allow people to come out of that little creek and recreational anglers to transit that area on their way to the bridge tunnel. They don't do any live training on the weekends, so that's why we opened it up. Crab ponding was already closed on Sundays, so open up that one day didn't seem like a reasonable way to go. And then that yellow or orange hatched area, that would be closed to all recreational and commercial activities 7 days a week. So that is what the Navy came to us and compromised. So we're looking to mirror those areas in our regulation at a public hearing on March. So we didn't want to let this committee know and be aware. That way, if they had any comments, they could provide them at the public hearing.
Question. That's for all commercial gear, gill nets, crab pots?
The yellow hatched area is for all commercial gear. The red hatched area is for all commercial gear.
And for recreational fishing, which area again?
So that yellow hatched area and the red and the deep red area, that would be closed to recreational fishing.
And
the large red area will be open on weekends to recreational fishing.
How far out does that large red area go?
It goes pretty far out. You can kind of see it in this, that large, well, as far as that right there, first trestle. The large area which they're originally asking for went all the way out to Thimble Shoals, and
no,
we thought that would be.
But this one with the small arms firing range looks like it goes out to the past the small boat channel.
Yes. Yep. All arms trestle.
How can you do that?
It's already a small arms firing range. So
I know,
live fire. It's
a small boat channel.
You're supposed to transit there.
No, transiting's okay. Transiting is fine. It's activity. So if you want to anchor up and fish in that area, that's what we prohibited. But transiting, they said, hey, if we need to stop live arms fire training to let a boat who's transiting through here may not be familiar with the area, it's reasonable. We'll do. We can live with that, but we don't want people anchoring up there. We don't want anchored up gear. We don't want, you know, people fishing down line for gill nets in that area.
How is the public going to be informed of this on a day-to-day basis when you have Joe Fisherman?
When they're doing live firing ranges, they do put buoys up. They do put awareness flags up. So through our normal public hearing process, through Facebook, informational meetings, and there will be a time for adjustment as well. The Navy understands that. Our MPOs understand that this will not be something that people latch onto right away. It will be something that over time that they will have to get used to.
Two biggest areas for launching small boats or using small boats in the lower bay on either side of that.
And transiting is okay.
And the other thing is that, I mean, people come in, and especially when the wind's blowing out of the south, they want to be fishing close in, and they'll want to, I mean, how, I understand the need. What I don't understand is a mechanism for letting not the public who goes to the VMRC website or who pays attention to the meeting, which is maybe 5% of the public, but just Joe Fisherman from Richmond who comes down and launches at Lynn Haven Inlet, to know that you know, I'm going through the small boat channel and, oh, I'm going to go fishing while I'm there and drift along inshore because it's rough out if you go further out.
Education and public information outreach is a problem we have across all our fisheries, whether we're talking about bag limits or regulatory changes. This is no different than that. Trying to get the word out in education, we'll have to use the same channels that we have.
Yes, sir.
I fished in there for years. That's an infrequent thing when they're firing there. They have a similar situation down off Damnet.
Mm-hmm.
And if flags are flying, you just stay the hell out.
Yep.
But it's not like it's every day, 365 days a year.
No, but with the crab pots in the area and stationary, that with their live arms firing, with their firing range and their amphibious training, the gear entanglement and interactions causing a lot of cancellations of required.
Well, you're talking to somebody
training.
That knows what goes on down there more than you do. That's a big hindrance. Any particular reason why it wasn't squared off to 90 degrees to the bridge tunnel on the offshore end?
That's the existing area, so it really just mirrors the area they already have. We could have taken up more area, but that's what they were requesting.
I think, Adam, as we talked about earlier, you all have worked the Navy down. They wanted
Correct.
A much larger area, Adams.
They wanted to restrict all commercial and recreation activity throughout this entire area you see, as well as that Waisaki drop zone over there in Anchorage Area A. So this was talking them down, knowing that there are a lot of recreational anglers transiting that area, knowing that there is a larger water body that they probably aren't using all the time. So it was... What was a talk down from what they critically needed to what they're originally asking for?
Yeah, I mean, we've got boat ships off Cape Charles now because they didn't want them off of Virginia Beach. Navy's gotten kind of pushy here lately.
Ed, can I?
Yeah,
Mr. Chairman. What up? I guess it's point 10 in the small arms.
Mm-hmm.
How far off the bridge is that? Point 10.
I don't have a map. I can have all as well. I don't have it available in front of me right now to say how far that is.
So you have no idea how far that is at all?
I don't have, not without any kind of mapping tool.
Okay.
Not that I have in front of me.
To be a certain distance away from the bridge?
Nope.
This is all there is.
That mirrors the area. That's already, if you pull up a chart, that is already the small arms firing range area. So we're not expanding it.
I actually looked into this. You're actually exceeding the restricted area by quite a bit. The small arms firing range is not there. It's not considered part of the restricted area or anything on a nautical chart. I just looked at this recently on my boat. The hatched line that's on top of the dark red area point straight up is actually considered the restricted area.
This one right here?
No. Further over. go towards right next to point 12.
Right next to point 12.
This right. One. That right there is actually on the nautical charts being a restricted area.
That is a restricted area.
That goes all the way to...
Correct. That is another restricted area.
It's not on the nautical chart then, as far as I know. I don't remember seeing that.
All right. Well, if somebody on this side...
I'm more concerned about two things. Area taken away from crab otters that doesn't need to be taken away from. Now, I can understand putting your gear along the beach to the west of the dark red area. I can understand them not wanting us there because I do know they do a lot of activity there. But that area that is the so-called small arms range, to put it bluntly, is ridiculous. And I understand that they want to be safe, but I just don't understand how they can actually go all the way out to where they're going, distance-wise. I don't understand that. They have a great big sand dune there to start with as a backstop. I know. I lived on the beach right there. I could hear the shooting in the morning. To me, this is overkill, and it's taking away more area from us that doesn't need to be taken care of.
And that's why we're bringing it in front of the committee, to let you know it is going to a public hearing in March. So if you do have concerns, please submit public comment. Please show up to the meeting. The Navy will be present at that meeting.
And would it be appropriate, Adam, for us to, if the committee feels so moved, to make a motion?
The committee is always free to make a motion.
Okay.
Can you have a modification to this, or is this pretty much set in stone as far as...
This is the modification. This is talking down to some to the critical areas versus the entire area.
Okay, Mr. Moore. He's
two questions. One, I know there was a similar closure not too long ago that was discussed that actually required a Army Corps action.
Mm-hmm.
I think partly because it was the Federal Channel in Bull Creek. Being there is a channel here, does this require a... contemporary Army Corps action?
No, they stayed out of the, are you talking about the Little Creek Channel?
Small
that
boat
was Little Creek Channel, right. But being that there is the small boat channel transit this area, and they're asking, right, the red is a closure?
It's a closure to activity, not transit.
Okay.
Right. So what they want to prevent people is anchoring up there and fishing in the middle that causes any kind of cancellations or any kind of public safety.
Follow-up question here. Was there ever, so the red area to the right, they're trying to close all the time?
Except for, so they're trying to close it commercially all the time. They're trying to close it recreationally, except to hook and line on weekends. So if you're out there on Saturday, Sunday, you can hook and line in that area because they don't do any training.
Uh-huh.
So that was their compromise. Hey, we're not out there anyway. Go ahead.
Instead of closing it, why not do... a similar process to what they do in Potomac, where if they're using the range, they actually use a range boat instead of... Because I agree with Mr. Sanford. We all know when they're shooting, it's not all the time,
mm-hmm.
and it seems like a tremendous burden on both recreational commercial fishermen to close it 5 days a week instead, you know, when there could be hours during the day and the night that this could be used by both sectors if they simply put a range boat out there like they do in Potomac.
Meeting with the Navy, their opinion was different than that. They felt that even though they have those beacons out there, that it wasn't enough to get their training done in public safety. So that's why they came forward.
Hang on. Mr. Powers, excuse me. I'm a bit confused. I can take my boat, I can come way inside the small channel, I can go in the small channel, and I can go across there.
Mm-hmm.
I have a rowboat. I don't go fast.
I guess not.
Or if I have a sailboat that I'm sailing, a small sailboat, and I'm sailing in there, I'm not going fast.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't I in danger when I do that?
For
and
sure.
When I cross and the area, it's going to close them down. They're supposed to stop shooting.
Yes. Their response to that is we understand, even they understand the public outreach and education is the issue, that if they see boats transiting that area, they can shut down their... live arm firing ranges for duration. It's when they have to cancel multiple days at a time or entire days that was becoming the issue. So when people actually come in there, anchor up, and linger in the area, that was the issue, not transiting. Because when you're transiting, generally, you're only in the area for less than 5 minutes. Obviously, a rowboat a kayak or a small sailboat would be an exception to that. But no, they did not have concerns about that.
And the other issue is, if striped bass ever come back in the lower part of the bay, that is a popular area on Thanksgiving weekend. It would be good to have it closed, have the area open on holidays and in addition to weekends, mm-hmm. Monday holidays, and Thanksgiving Thursday and Friday.
We mentioned that. We tried to go that route as well because it was weekends. We even tried to get noon on Friday. They do conduct training on holidays.
Wow. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Did you say that's 10 square miles?
No, the original area was about 10.5 square miles, so this is much less. I don't have the actual square footage.
Well, then you say it's going to be closed for commercial crabbing.
In recreational crabbing as well.
Commercial crabbing?
Mm-hmm.
Year-round?
Yes.
So basically, we created another sanctuary.
In some way, shape, or form, yes.
Well, if you can't crab there, it's a sanctuary. So, my next question will be, where do we benefit? If we're going to give up nearly 10 square mile sanctuary year-round, where do we benefit? Where does the crabber benefit from that? We're trading that section where people crab at for what?
Public safety.
You understand what I'm saying? We've created a sanctuary, is what we did. Oh, we've created another sanctuary.
Yeah.
And again, that's why we wanted to bring it to the committee, so it didn't go in front of the commission in March, and everyone came back and said we had no idea. We wanted to make sure that this committee was aware because it would probably affect this committee the most.
Does anyone here know approximately how many people crab in that area?
Ms. Sanford, probably.
I can tell you probably 10 or 15 people probably crab in that area. There was actually more last year than there have been probably in 25 years.
We were assuming about a dozen.
That's what has happened.
More and more crab pots. It hasn't been an issue in the past, but it's more of crab pots that moved in there. That's created the issue.
You know, when this happens, you're not only affecting the crab potters, but you're affecting gill netters. That's why I was asking about the distance off the bridge.
Yeah,
so, I mean, we're
all safe.
Everybody. I mean, you're affecting everybody is what you're doing.
You know, I think it is. Yes, sir.
This is a rough estimate, but I think it's about a quarter mile by a half mile. About a quarter mile or so along the shore, about a half mile. I was just trying to Google it.
Thanks, Rob.
The big red one's halfway to the first island. That's four miles to the first island, I think.
No, it's a lot bigger than that at Bridgestone. So they're... As far as like the federal government, they had no leeway whatsoever. They were not interested in cutting
this,
it off.
This was the leeway. This,
okay. I guess this has got to go before the commission.
Correct.
There's no way that we could stop and possibly have a meeting with the crabbers or whatever that you could possibly set up or other commercial fishermen at all to probably work something out that's more reasonable because this is a very large area that's going to be shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like I said, I mean, I can understand directly in front of where they do exercise and stuff like that. But off to the side here, you're going to affect an awful lot of people.
A member of the audience, I see you here. Yes, sir.
I might be able to add something here. My name is Rich Murray, and I come from the northern part of the Chesapeake Bay. Up in the northern part of the Chesapeake Bay, starting in about the Gunpowder River all the way up to the Susquehanna River, is Aberdeen Proving Ground. Aberdeen Proving Ground encompasses at least 50% of the Chesapeake Bay as a restricted area. It's used by the military, mostly the Army, sometimes the Navy, sometimes the Air Force. Okay? They fire in there all the time. What happens is they generally don't fire outside of 9 o'clock. That's the way that was their schedule. It may be different here. But when they're firing, it's well known. People around there in the neighborhoods, both recreational and commercial, are excluded, period. You're out. There's picket boats out there, and they monitor VHF channels. And if you don't know if they're firing, you get on your VHF, you call them, are you firing, what's on for today? You can't go here, you can't go there, you can't do that. Well, I want to go up into the Bush River. Well, you can just sit tight till we're done firing, and we'll call you.
Right.
it was incumbent on us to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, get out there with our boats, get in that restricted area and get out, because probably by that 9 o'clock we were going to get kicked out. Some days we didn't get kicked out. Some days we got kicked out even though they initially said, we're open. All you grabbers that are listening, get your gear and get out. All you fishermen, get out. Basically, it was an ask permission.
Yeah.
They monitored it with picket boats. They also monitored it with shore stations, and they monitored it just by looking at it. And you could call the day before and ask, and they would try to give you a schedule. Why can't the military do that in this part of the police? At least it allowed the crabbers some time to get in there.
I think, Adam, as I'm understanding you, when we talked earlier, this is not the same as Aberdeen. We've got the guys in and out of there with watercraft, all their different crazy SEAL team stuff, all that different stuff that's moving in and around, and they've been getting yeah. caught up in gear.
Caught up in gear, and they've had to have a lot of cancellations of exercises as well as rescheduling. It is costing them efficiency. It is costing them money. So that was the catalyst for them reaching out to us to try and mirror some of these areas and restrict some of the fishing.
But go ahead, Mr. Powers. But that is the close end to the shore areas. I'm more concerned about this red area that goes out 2 miles or so. And further, if you bring it back up.
I'm sorry.
The area just to the right of that red area where it triangles off, that's a public beach that has any number of catamarans on it all summer long. And they use them during the week and certainly on the weekends and on holidays, especially Labor Day, Memorial Day, or Labor Day holiday. They used to have a regatta off of there, off of the beach on the other side.
Again, the only thing we're doing is restricting recreational and commercial activities. So if you want to take your catamaran out there and you want to swim, that is on the Navy to enforce if it's an issue. We're not enforcing anchoring your catamaran.
So I can take my catamaran and just sail all around in that pink area and be fine.
So, again, we're not enforcing transiting or anything. The only thing that we are mirroring is the area and restricting the commercial and recreational activities. So neither, that would not fall into that.
So fixed gear, essentially.
Yes.
Recreational fishing.
Fixed, when we say recreational gear, we are talking about recreational crab pots, and they also don't want hook and line gears, aka someone anchoring up and spending time in that area.
What about drifting? Because that's the way you normally fish those areas. Then you're okay?
No. Yeah. That would be recreational activity. Yep.
Okay.
On the weekends, again, you're fine.
Okay. Mr. Moore, you hit.
Yeah, just I want to confirm one thing. So both of these areas will require affirmative action by the commission.
Correct.
Put in place.
Correct. At the March 24th meeting.
So the public notice will be issued February.
Yes, correct.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
So it'll be a public notice at our March.
We've requested the public hearing in January, so the public hearing has already been approved. But the public hearing will happen in March, not February.
Okay.
So when you first started talking about this, you said that the Navy said they had buoys out for the people?
I'm going based on what they're telling me. They're saying when they have active firing, they do have some kind of visual.
Okay, but there's no buoys or anything like that.
No permanent fixed ones as far as I know.
I can tell you this from my experience being here, and I've crabbed there for a very long time. I know in the past what I would do is I'd go in that area early in the morning, crab, and get out of there before anything ever started. I've never once had a boat come up to me. I've never had anybody call me on a VHF. Nothing like that. Now, I have, on occasion, had a couple guys, you know, wave their hands, you know, hey, we're getting ready to start a live fire, and we would leave. I think that, I know y'all are reluctant to do this, but if you could do something different than what you're doing, meaning probably try to postpone this and try to have another meeting, I would greatly appreciate it. And I think what you're doing is you're opening up a really, really big can of worms here. You're going to have all kinds of problems. First off, it's going to be an enforcement problem. You're going to have MPOs there constantly is what you're going to have, basically. You know, if you can adjust that line from like 3 to 10 on the small arms fire range, I can see that. because that's quite a ways off the beach. And I can tell you, I've crabbed out there that far off the beach, and they continued to fire. They had no problem with that whatsoever. Now, you know, and I wasn't too worried about it, because if you go down there, there's about a 4 or 5 story sand dune that's their backstop. Now, I know people are not very good at shooting guns sometimes, but the chances of me getting hit are very, very slim. And I can tell you, I've never heard of anybody ever getting shot or boats or anything.
So let me ask the committee this. Do we want to make some motion, or would it be appropriate for us to make some motion about what we think would be appropriate here?
Any motion that this committee makes during the public hearing, I can bring forward and voice those concerns to the commission. That right. CMAQ believe this, and this is their motion.
I understand the need for this. I have no problem with this whatsoever. You know, but the area that they're asking for beyond that lineup that I'm talking about, 3 and 10, is like really, really extreme in my opinion. And I can tell you that I've looked at the nautical chart, the NOAA chart. That is not a restricted area. It's a danger area, which is a different terminology. I know there's a couple of them there. Restricted area is for deer completely. So technically, if the Coast Guard wanted to enforce more than what the... I mean, they can enforce all the way out to the channel if they wanted to, technically. But, you know, so I just find this really hard to... understand the distance off the beach. The other thing, could you go back to the Cape Henry area? So that's going to be shut down.
Yes.
In the same manner.
Correct.
Okay. Do you know where the line is on the western edge of the beach? There, where that line actually is, where it comes to the shore.
What actual landmark is there?
Yeah. What landmark?
Not off the top of my head. No.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, so. How do you know? I mean, where it is exactly, where that line is?
I would lay odds that line is at the border between Seashore State Park, or whatever it's called now, and the Port Story.
Okay. Because?
Same as the line over here is the edge of Chicks Beach and Little Creek.
Okay. Because also, that is also a restricted area.
Yes. What they originally wanted was about point A right there, in a 1 mile circle around point A, which came out here,
right.
Came on land. So it was very difficult, because it's an imaginary line on a nautical chart that doesn't exist. So rather than going that way, it was probably easier to enforce and understand to follow that anchorage area.
Because there's a pound net there.
Mm-hmm.
So are y'all going to enforce this pound net not being fished?
You have to be determined, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
you have to be determined.
You know, I mean, we're mm-hmm. affecting a lot more people than we think by doing what we're doing, you know, and having a chart that is not with no numbers of
one question.
All right, let's see. Mr. Moore's got a question.
Can you go back to the picture area? So that area they're proposing to be
close to recreational and commercial activity.
At all times?
Yes. That is their drop zone and live firing training area as well.
Again in the fall, I'm sorry.
Hang on, yeah, so I think, I appreciate your work to get it to where we've gotten so far, but it does seem kind of excessive. And I don't know how we can make a motion that might say this is too excessive. Maybe we can, I don't know. Is anybody have some better terminology? Adam, any thoughts on your part that we might be able to pare this down a little bit to a more reasonable situation?
Yeah, I got 2 words. Rob Whitman.
Okay. Yeah. Hang on, Rob's got something on his mind. I had a question for him in that regard.
This has come over. This is something that originally started back in May 2019. So it's not something that's just popped up in the last couple months. It is something that the Navy has to come directly to the Commissioner and our law enforcement for their support. We have gone back and forth with them a few times, trying to pare down that area from what they originally asked for to what you see in front of you. This is a great compromise from what they were originally asking for. They were sympathetic to transiting boats. They were sympathetic to the Little Creek Channel. They were sympathetic going all the way out to Thimble Shoals. So this was the compromise pared down from what it was.
Yes, sir, Mr. Nixon.
The only thing I have to say about that is you folks fell way short of letting some of us that are affected by this know that this was even going on. And then you're going to dump it on us right here when it's do or die. And I wish we had been able to have a couple people that are directly affected by this in on some of the conversations with the Navy.
We do have time on this.
Yeah,
I mean, Mark and I have talked about this before, but we have time with this. It's not going to, March meeting is the 24th. So we still got, you know, 5.5-6 weeks.
I mean, all they have to do is put a boat out there. I mean, yeah. I've never had a boat ever come up to me. I know why you're doing this now.
Yeah.
I know exactly why. And I think what it comes down to is a couple bad people having a really poor attitude about things. And it shouldn't affect the good crabbers or the good fishermen, you know.
One of their letters to us reflected that. They said they asked people to move, and they said no, and they didn't. They didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's always the lowest common denominator that messes up.
And it's easy for the Navy to just say, we'll take it all.
Right.
And it's, I mean, you know, as a committee, you can go ahead and recommend, somebody said 310, you know,
right,
make the line there. You can say, we're not going to approve this at all. You can say, we'd like it postponed. You know, we can do anything. I mean, you can make a recommendation. I mean, we've already we were going to hear this in the February meeting, but we postponed it to get more information.
Right. Thank you for that moment. Yes, sir.
Let me ask a question, then I'm going to have a motion ready.
Yeah.
Have you all had the same discussion with FMAC?
No. No.
No. So I think the motion might be that we ask DMRC to postpone this until FMAC and CMAC can have a joint meeting with staff and representative of the Navy to discuss this. And I'll offer that as a motion if at least for some time.
Okay. All right. Well, that certainly sounds
good. I'll second that motion, but I have a comment.
Go ahead, Mr. Bowers.
Yeah, FMAC is meeting March 9th.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm confused a little bit from a concept of how far a bullet will travel. If it will travel to the end of that red box.
Well, you said what, red box, Mr.
I mean the red hash box.
Red hash box. That's a long way.
Aren't we worried about the people that are driving back and forth across the Chesapeake Bay Bridge tunnel day in and day out? And, I mean, I can see if we do it from 3 to 10 that you can say, yes, that covers about the same kind of range as it would be to get to a spent round to the bridge tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
But to go all the way out to where it is, 2 miles out into the bay, which is my thumbnail of how far out that is really, really excessive.
And it's taking a bit of a sledgehammer to the situation.
Yeah, and furthermore, like I said, it goes right past where the small boat channel is, and a small boat channel is 1 mile off the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't see it on the chart. Yeah, it's right above 10. And
okay,
that is where recreational fishermen, mm-hmm, or boaters are kind of told to go through. And you know, the fact that they're going across and transiting, yes, maybe they can stop the guys at the range from shooting at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But are they going to, you know, see them coming up the bridge and then take a hard right or hard left and boom, they're through?
Right.
I mean, it's just...
We have a motion. And the motion is essentially for a postponement.
Ask the commission not to act upon this until there can be a joint meeting of FMAC and CMAC with both the Navy and the MRC staff, so we can have a
public.
So, does anybody want to second that motion?
I already did.
You did.
Yes. I have another comment towards that, and that meeting should not be held until after there's a press release from this agency showing this map and the Virginian pilot, because there are going to be a lot of people that are going to be grumpy about that live down there and boat down there all the time. And the marina owners, both in Little Creek, mm-hmm, and in Lynn Haven, are probably going to not be happy also, although I don't know how many marinas are left in Lynn Haven.
Okay.
Do you want the entire CMAC with the FMAC, or do you just want a representation of the CMAC? Because we have a meeting on the 9th.
I think more the merrier, more people do.
Okay, because we have a meeting on the 9th if we can do it at the same time.
Except we already have agenda items.
I know. That's the only problem. But we'd be bringing this up anyway.
I've got another quick question. The Cape Henry area there, were they very specific about any certain conflict that they had by any chance?
You talked to them.
Their specific contact was the drop. They had live training there. They can speak to their training. It's a drop zone, so they have live drops from air, and they have live combat. Live combat areas in there as well. That was their concern.
Combat areas are on the beach. They don't actually do anything. It's a drop zone. I'm just kind of curious to why there's a problem down there, because really, honestly, there's not a whole lot of activity there. I didn't know if they were just kind of throwing that in just to cover.
No.
All right. Well, so let's go ahead and vote on the motion that's been seconded by Mr. Powers.
I'm not sure. Exactly what the motion was. Yes, I can read the motion.
Mr. Moore can state it, I'm sure, one more time.
What I would say is that the Blue Crab Management Advisory Committee asked that the Marine Resources Commission not take action on this matter until there's been a public meeting with Navy officials and BMRC staff on the matter.
Yeah, well, Mr. Powell mentioned something about running something in the paper. Are you willing to?
I can make that as an amendment.
I'm happy. That can be a friendly amendment.
And furthermore, that meeting needs to be at night, not at 4 in the afternoon.
Gotcha.
So the public can actually attend.
Okay, well, that's a big
idea. Well, why don't we just add that this plan is public noticed.
Okay. All right. Is everybody good with that? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Unanimous.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, thank you. I appreciate you trying to whittle it down, but I tell you, and I do believe we've got to be mindful of the Navy's intents, but it seems like, say, a bit of a sledgehammer to a problem that maybe is not that big. Alexa, so you can tell us about the agents that we've talked about before.
Well, I don't think I'm telling you anything you don't know. We've gone over a lot of this information last year. I think you saw most of it in the briefing I sent out. But at the meetings last year, we said what we need is a night where we can just talk about agents, have enough time to come to some decision without saying, well, let's move on so we can get to the next thing. So here we have the average blue crab harvest by agents versus the total. So on average, from 2013 to 18, about 9.3% of harvest came from agents. A couple people asked about where agents are fishing. The only big difference I saw was agents fished a little less in the main stem, a little more in the James. In the upper left is the number of agent licenses that were approved, the number that were sold, and the number that were active or reported harvest. 2019 harvest numbers are not finalized. That's the question mark. The bottom left table has number of agents that were out of state, number of agents that are family, or I think as we defined it, share a last name or a residence, and then medical over 125. So when we're below 125, people don't have to say, I'm asking for an agent because of medical reasons. But if they need to go exceed the 125 agent cap, they do need documentation. So we don't have any information on a total number of medical agents. And then we also have agents by license category. So we've put together a couple suggestions that the committee could discuss. Stay as is, 125 agents. Reduce the number of agents to some number, and that could even be stepped down over a course of several years. Agents only for medical and military deployment. Agents only for medical, military deployment, and direct family. Temporary agents, so let's say someone in your family passes away, you need someone to tend your pots, you can apply for, let's say, a 14-day or a 30-day agent, and cap that at maybe two per year. And another idea, no agent more than 2 consecutive years. So it can't be someone has an agent every single year, but, you know, has this year and that year, then they can't get an agent the next year, the following year. Again, these are all suggestions, things to discuss. The one thing to keep in mind is when the current agent system was based on the number of people in 2012 who had agents. They're all eligible to continue to get agents, and then after that, it goes to people who apply. 35 agents in 2019 were 4 people who had them in 2012. The people in 2012 who had agents, 72 still have crab licenses. So they, if they wanted to, they could get agents. So that's something to consider when we're discussing reducing the number of agents or really any of these other options. That's all the information we have. So, you know, if anyone has particular options they want to discuss, your floor is open.
I know this was a top, Mr. Nixon.
How would you propose to reduce the number of agents?
We don't have a preferred option at this point. These are suggestions compiled from the committee, from staff, from other sources. I'd say maybe not go from 125 down to, you know, 50 the next year. There is an option to step down.
What I'm getting at is, how do you determine who doesn't get their agent permit?
So it goes to, I believe, people who had it in 2012, and then after that, it's first come, first serve.
Say that one more time, please.
So of the 125 agents, they first go to anyone who had an agent in 2012, and after that, it's first come, first serve. The first applications to come in will be the first ones approved. It gets shut down to 125 once all those applications are approved, and then after that, there's only exceptions for medical or any other hardship case.
Could you show me again how many agents were really used in 2019, for instance?
One medical.
Yeah. And again, medical, I think it usually fills up sometime in April, so if in March you knew your doctor wasn't going to allow you to go fishing or crabbing, you could get an agent and it wouldn't be recorded because it wasn't an exception to the cap.
Can I ask one question? Is any record of the ones that are not a resident of Virginia?
That's out of
state. Nine.
Not many.
Yeah, it's whoever didn't have a Virginia driver's license or Virginia identification.
They lived in Virginia. In other words, even though you have a Virginia driver's license, you don't have to live here. I don't think.
Do you record residence?
Technically, you're supposed to.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Because I know some Mexicans have a Virginia driver's license, but they don't live here. They have to go back every year.
They
don't have to get it, but they sure did got it.
Yeah.
They don't have a residence.
You have to. The state law says.
You're not a resident of Virginia.
No, you're not a. You can be a resident of Virginia for part time. And you can have a primary residence in another state.
Yeah, but how about another country?
Another country too.
Yeah, but
you don't even have to be documented to get a driver's license, but that's another matter.
Yeah, but I say that ain't a resident of Virginia though, in my opinion.
All we were able to look at is the residence they provided, is it in Virginia?
Okay. You still ain't, I mean, we deceit the form, my opinion. I got a son that's, I got 4 generations on water. He can't get a crab license, but somebody can bring a Mexican in here and use their crab license. I think you're going, that's a little bit too far-fetched for me.
Mm-hmm.
I got a big problem with that.
Mr. Chairman,
I mean, if you have tables, they shouldn't live in Virginia.
Yeah, I think you make a good point.
A question about this table. So the medical over 125, and then that, remind me,
shut up.
What that's explaining.
So those are exceptions to the 125 cap. We reached the 125 cap, and even then, if you're going out for surgery or something, you can apply to the commissioner and get an exception.
And the same is true for the family.
Yes.
Right. That's what it was supposed to be anyway.
I know family transfers are counted, not for
the cap. The agent was for somebody that got sick.
Okay, family is not for agents. It's only for transfers.
Okay, all right. Okay. Well, I can tell this is a hot button issue still. Yes. We got all kinds of hands up. We'll go from left to right. How about that? Who's down there?
Steve?
Okay.
I mean, what are we actually trying to do with the agent? I mean, are we trying to control latent effort? Is that what we're doing? Those people, those 125 people that have a license, you know, looks like me the simplest thing to do, like they do on the Potomac River. You pay for a helper on your boat, and he's able to fish with your license. If you were sick or whatever, you're not restricted to having to apply in like a lottery system in December for it. I mean, you know, why are we? What's the big reason behind the agent issue?
I think some of the concern is rather than if someone wants to get out of the fishery, they can pay someone to do it rather than put that license up for sale and allow someone else to get their own license. I mean, most of the where this issue comes from is the committee has expressed concerns with the agent program.
My concern is how many you got on the waiting list for crab license? That's my concern. Them people on the waiting list are waiting, and they got some other people fishing the possum out of the country. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got a big problem with the fact that the ones that's on the waiting list, they're not being freaked out.
All right. Let's go back. I want to start with Mr. Graham. I know he...
Back to Pete's original question. How do you bring the number from 125 back? And you were saying 2012 was the first year, and how many people are eligible that had them in 2012? 70-some?
72 of the people who had agents in 2012 still have crab licenses.
And how many of those were active this year? Four? Did you say that number? How many
35 had agents this
35.
Year.
35. So 40-some, if we do something tonight or whenever, can actually go out and start, that latent effort can become utilized. That would be the concern.
Perhaps unless there was a new control date, that's
right.
A recommendation that could be made.
So from my standpoint, we're entitled to 35. That's the way I view it. We're starting from 35, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And then we go from there to get to the 125, and we'll decide how we're going to get there, who's going to be entitled, and how we want to lay this thing out. What is rightful hardship?
Yeah.
In our opinion, our view.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Can I go way back from the beginning of this? I say this every meeting, but I just want to make sure that some of the new folks understand how this started. Prior to 1993, when all this licensing came about, I actually can't remember what year it was. It might have been back in the late 80s. Code read that the operator of the boat had to have the license in his name. And he had to be the operator of the boat. He couldn't be a stern man and have his mate running the boat. The license had to be in the name of the operator of the boat. Fellow at Lynn Haven had somebody that would run his boat sometimes, just temporarily for the day or 2 days, and he got a ticket because the guy running the boat wasn't the license holder. The gear was licensed. Every other fishery that we had in the Commonwealth at that time, gillnets, crab dredging, pound netting, everything else, did not require the operator of the boat to hold the license. The gear was licensed in the name of the boat, or with the boat number, or the registration on it. So I came in front of the commission. I said, this is a little bit of a problem. Why can't we just make them all the same? If that boy could go out and dredge his boat, if he had an illness or something to do or whatever. What's the difference between that and crabbing with this boat for a day? Well, the commission said, fine, no problem. And we did that. When all the licenses were changed in 93, we had this discussion again and came up with the idea of an agent. Now, this is back when Jack Travelstead was the chief, and Rob was just on staff at that time. He wasn't even a deputy, but he remembers. All the history's left now. The discussion went that, well, we'd have this for a temporary situation for a hardship. But what happened over the course of between then and, I guess, even 2012, it became a way, after we came up with pot limits, to be able to circumvent the pot limit laws by buying multiple licenses and putting them in different family members' names.
Yep.
And then you could take whoever you wanted on the crew, hire somebody, put them on the boat with you, let them be the agent for whatever other family member that you bought the permit for. It might have been your grandmother, your wife, your daughter or son or whatever, and then you could have multiple licenses on the boat. This is where the problems come in, is you've created a situation where you've put some people at odds with others, because in the river you have a 255 pot limit and the guy next to you, he's fishing over 500. And then it became even a little more complicated in the legislature a couple years ago with a ruling, and I really don't even know how this reads, with oyster crew members on the boat and how you could change the license from one to the other when there was no waiting time or something. So it's a problem as far as people getting the leg up on the guy next to them crabbing double the amount of pots. Now, you can only have one limit on the boat, no matter how many licenses are on there. But the gear is still in the water, it's still taking up room, and it's still catching. And a lot of us over the years, as crabbing waned a little bit, we're getting so we do a 2 or 3 day soak anyhow. So that's no problem. You still have a whole rig to fish one day, 255 pots in a river. And the boy next to you, if he does a 2 day soak, he fishes 125 or 130. And it's not an equitable situation for something that was supposed to be temporary. And some people, you know, I brought this up in a meeting several years ago. I had a fellow up the bay, was down at Lynn Haven one year, and he was complaining about somebody had all these Mexicans out there on different licenses working the gear, and he complained to me about it. Well, I brought it up in a meeting, and I think I might have caused a family problem. But that's the concern that I have. It's not so much the number of them or how many there are. It's the advantage that somebody with multiple licenses has by allowing them to set double the gear of the guy next to him.
Right. Yeah. Mr. George, I know he wanted to say something.
I probably said enough.
You can keep, you had something.
I mean, when this was all brought up about these agents, it was brought up years ago on medical. You had to come to the commission to get a medical. If you couldn't crab your pots, but you could get somebody.
Right.
And the commissioner would authorize it. And all of a sudden, it got blown in proportion. I don't know what happened, but it went weird proportion.
All right. Mr. Moore?
One thing about this, you know, as Alexander mentioned, we've been having this discussion for years. I think one of the reasons that we didn't want to make drastic changes at one point was people had a business set up around using an agent, and we didn't want to put a hard stop on that. We've been discussing this for so long. Maybe the proper approach, and thinking a lot of what Pete has said about this over the years, that you know the three things listed up there, medical, military, or direct, are the things that should really qualify for an agent. And we should phase in possibly a ban on other agent uses over the next 2, 3, 4 years. I think that would get us back to the heart of what agents possibly were, and it would give people who have a business set up on using an agent as a way to transfer or something like that. We wouldn't be turning the spigot off right away, but we would let people know that, hey, this is what may change, and I just offer that as a possible way to continue to work out of this.
Yeah, interesting. We got some more hands up. Yes, sir.
you know, my problem is this. They've got 9.3% of the harvest, and we have people on a waiting list that can't go to work. You know, I know two fishermen right now, if the dog fishery shuts down, and we're pretty close as far as our quota being caught up, they're not going to have anything to do. Right. They're sitting there twiddling their thumbs, waiting to do something else at a later time. You know, I mean, 9.3% of the harvest. We don't have a dredge fishery anymore, and, you know, we got people on the waiting list.
How much was the dredge fishery?
I don't know.
Curiosity.
I think it was like 15% of the harvest is what it was.
So,
I think you're right.
12%?
It was down, yeah.
Yeah, you got 86. Yeah, that problem.
I mean, if we want to be realistic, I know that most likely the people that have agents will probably do something else, maybe go craft, who knows. So it's not realistically 9.3%, but I think
right.
a percentage of that harvest that they're taking should go to a full-time commercial fisherman that really depend on this. You know, phasing this out, I'm good with that.
Yeah,
I'm very good with that. I personally would like to see, you know, 35 people having the ability to have their agent this year. I don't have a problem with that whatsoever. But if we've got full-time commercial fishermen sitting around that can't go to work, then, you know, I have a problem.
I hear you.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay.
So I'm going to start by adding something else to your list. And it's on code. And this is a copy of the code section. And I've handed it out. 28.2241F. Registration of commercial fishermen shall not be transferable. What I suggest is no matter what we do, to be an agent, you have to have a commercial card. Period. Now, I agree that family members, even if whatever we do for canceling or moving this stuff to a lesser amount, family members should be able to do to work as agents. Because that is a way, like you said, to hand it down in your family that, you know, my father did it, he's too old to do it now, so my son's going to take his license and start crabbing now, or my nephew even, something like that, but it's got to be a direct relations and not my third cousin. And the other thing is the temporary agents, absolutely, but again, they should have their own waterman's card to be able to do that. That would allow you to say to your buddy who's grabbing out beside you, I can't work the next 3 days, the next week, can you pull my pots for me and deal with them? I mean, or however you choose to do it.
I wouldn't do that. I'd pull my pots up.
You'd pull your pots up, but or somebody injures themselves in these.
No, I can see medical. I have no problem with that whatsoever.
Anyway,
okay.
So those are but the other way to look at this from a, is it a problem? If you look at Kirkley's study from, I want to say, the early 2000s, this fishery can sustain itself on 300 crabbers from a market standpoint and all that kind of stuff. And it is overcapitalized as it is. And with anything we can do to get the gear out of the water, that especially gear that's being used in what I would call a way just to make money because I have a boat that and a license I can lease, is a reasonable thing to do.
We've got a member of the audience. He's got his hands up in a.
When I was crabbing, and this was before. When we were catching 51 bushels and all, and then when they, you know, cut your quota back to what you're allowed per license and everything else, well, right when I first started crabbing, it was the 51. Then a couple years in, it was, you know, your bigger licenses just went up in price. They were $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 to get, you know, just to catch more crabs now. Well, I had another license in my wife's name, and I'd put the license in my mate's name, and we'd go to work, and, you know, we were technically allowed to set 400, 450 pots in, and, you know, you're not going to make a living off 255 crab pots, you know. You're not going to be able to fish them every single day, and go to work. You know, you need a double catch and everything else. And another thing, it's a lot of younger people that probably don't have the money to put into it, buying a license, especially the price tag they are now. And, you know, if they went out of agent, just like you rent a house, you don't just buy a house, and, you know, you're able to work your way up and go to work. But, you know, I mean, we got the lowest limits, lowest pot limits in the whole East Coast. And, you know, you can't make a living on 255 grab pots. Not if you got kids, a house, all that. And another issue is, I don't even think there was a limit on peeler pots until the limits came out. And 250 peeler pots, you're really not going to make a living.
210.
Yeah, 210. And, I mean, I think a lot of this is people that are trying to be legal. But they also got to go buy another license now to have a mate and be able to fish the amount of pots to make a living. You're not going to make a living off 210 grab pots. Unless you want to make a criminal out of somebody.
You make a good, interesting point. Mr. Burns.
That's why I have an agent, because peeler potting, you can't make a living fishing 210. I got one in my wife's name, and I'm keeping it for my son. And, you know, my mate's on the boat with me every day peeler potting, so it's legal.
Right.
And you can put over 420.
Right. It's become part of the business model for crabbing, is what these two gentlemen are saying.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to be a list.
As you said, it's become a standard operating procedure.
At one point in time, and that's why we've gone through all this stuff, you can make plenty of money with 250
bucks. We can,
but you can't anymore. And why is that?
Well, because it's expensive, everything else.
No. Why is that?
You can't catch enough.
I'll tell you what.
Because the fishery is overcapitalized.
Well, you can't catch enough.
You're catching enough. The market can't even handle it. You know, 30 years ago, you didn't have South Carolina and all that. We were shipping crabs down there. They weren't even crabbing as much. Now it's a big item because the price of crabs and everything else. It's like there's no crabs because the market can't handle it. $20 slips in the fall. Who can make it on that?
Well, that's because crabbing got so bad, and health got to be a problem, that they closed up. They couldn't stay in business either.
Okay.
There used to be 6 picking houses where he is,
13.
In the same block now, because there were crabs back then.
Well, we have now, and we should
talk
about
it. You haven't seen any crabs.
Now, hang on. Let's just keep ourselves in order here. We had someone else I know had their hand up. Anybody else? Okay. Mr. Cox?
This is one of the hardest decisions I believe I've been on this board for.
Yeah.
It is. This is tough. Originally, it was good. It was for people that were sick or hurt or in the military. But we talk about getting rid of agents. So we get rid of some people. Get rid of them, they don't have no job. And the people on the waiting list, been waiting, they get the job. So you put some people out of work and you put some people in. That's a hard decision to make. I'm gonna take your living and wait for you, but I'm going to get it.
Yeah.
And you know, it has its ups and downs, you know. It does. And it's gone too far. And I do believe that if you are agent, then you should have a commercial card. I'm firm on that. We're all required to have a commercial card if we're a warden. If you're an agent, you use mine. That's wrong. You should have a commercial card. If anything's ever going to be done, it's got to be done over a period of time. To give the person, if you're my agent and I've got license space 250 pots, I got a lot of money invested in these pots, and all of a sudden, you're out. That's not right. I should have time to decide whether I want to transfer this license to my agent, I want to transfer them, or do I want to get one of my children, or do I want to get out. But for me to sit here and say, I'm going to take your living away from you, and I'm going to take it from myself, that's a hard decision to make.
Well,
it's got to be a different plan that gives the people on the waiting list opportunity to get there, and the people on the agents to make the decision.
Yes, sir.
I'm gonna bring something up. How many agents was it this year?
In 95.
About 95 were actively harvested.
When we base it on 95, it's got, and it don't increase no more. And as in 95 drop out, it decreases. That way you ain't gonna take a job from nobody.
So you'll be looking for an approach of like attrition, essentially. When you're asked,
you stop getting them, they drop that number down.
It's not necessarily the same people who get it every year. There's the 2012 people, and then after that it's first come, first serve. So if someone new put in this year who didn't have it before, they're getting a new one, and someone who had it last year may not have time to get theirs in before it's full. So it's not necessarily always the same people that they can plan on having an agent.
Agree with that. So let me make sure I got this straight. What you just described to me, you've got to apply for it. You've got to be in line for.
Yep.
If you get in the back of the line, you're not going to get it.
Depending on when we hit the cap, and
I had it last year. I get it this year deal.
Only if you had an agent in 2012. But if you had it last year, you're not guaranteed in the next year.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
My question was, so there is a control date on that, is that correct?
If you had an agent in 2012.
Okay. And those people in 2012, we're down to 35 of them now, is that correct?
35 had agents last year, but if they wanted, 72 could have gotten agents because they still have crab licenses.
Okay.
So what I would be interested in, and I doubt you have the number off the top of your computer right now. If we said, if you used an agent, if you were one of those original, and you used an agent within the last 3 years, what number would we come up with? Because that says you've been doing it some recently, and we want to, but that doesn't break out who was in the pre-2012 group.
It started
35 last year. But if it's like 50, or some number like that, I think that's a reasonable thing to say. You've been doing it in the recent past, so we're not taking away from you because you changed 1 year to the next, but that it we are going to phase out those. The other thing I think is we should not have a big restriction on family. I think that ought to be allowed. And again, that we should, whoever is an agent, and maybe you do 2 years before you phase this in so that someone can go out and apply for a card now, has to have a waterman's card if you're going to be an agent. I still think it's illegal to do it, but...
The percentage of the 10% that the agents harvest, when I would fill my report out, my agent would be on my report as well. So, I mean, are they considered that, you know, is that 10% in with them?
That's where the 10% comes from. We pulled trips that had fished with agent, yes. So that's where that 9.3 came from.
I'm already, catching what I'm going to catch, and now the agents is, you know, showing on the graph is 10% of that. Correct?
That's what you're saying.
We
don't have a harvest from agents and people who had agents.
Yeah,
it's only from trips with agents.
That's not accurate.
Hmm. So, what do you do with that? Split it in half or something?
I'm sorry?
You can't tell the amount caught each day. You need to cut it in half in case you don't get your whole limit on each card.
No, I think that's not what she said. I believe
if I heard
your logic correctly, you said in your case that would not have counted as an agent because it was an agent and someone else, and it was on the someone else's report.
So where the 9.3 came from was if there was an agent if an agent fished that trip, they report agent yes. And then we selected all trips that had agent yes.
Yeah.
So not all MRC IDs that were approved with agents. It was just the agent specifically did the harvesting that day.
So if you had someone like him who said, on my vessel today, I had myself and an agent, and he reported it all as his landings, would you count that as an agent's landing or his landings? How do you know which way it is? You said it would be his landings.
It would be his landing because...
But it wouldn't count towards his 10%.
Correct, because the licensee was...
Okay, so that means that if the more people that are out there like you're doing it, what drive that 9% up.
So Dave, where you were fishing is in the orange.
Okay.
So let me get this straight. So we don't really know the agent's catch, since what you're telling me right here.
You only know the agent's catch if they were fishing by themselves without someone who was licensed.
Somebody on the boat by themselves.
And that's not usually the setup, is what I'm hearing. It's usually a captain who's got a license and an agent, too.
My guess would be every day. I don't know about anyone else's.
Yeah, but he's saying the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Some of them do, some of them don't.
I understand everybody, we're not all going to agree on it, I guess.
No,
that,
we won't.
But it's just people trying to be legal is why you do it, like the laws are now.
It's an interesting dynamic. I mean, like you say, it's become a part of the business model. Mr. Moore.
So knowing that, I think part of this kind of, I think Pete's point was there's more to catch by you than some things. So if someone, if you're reporting it as, if the license on the boat is in the orange there, if someone is working with an agent, they're still limited to just the higher limit. We know that because we did that a couple of years ago. So they can't... One limit per vessel, right.
And agents can't hold their own licenses.
Right. No, right. But the issue is, I think in most cases, what's being said is that, you know, you can only catch half a limit per day on one license. So by having an agent on board, you can catch that whole boat's limit.
No, you're still only allowed 29 a day.
I know that. You're only allowed 29 a day. But if you only fished your 250 pods, you could only catch half a limit. But if you fish another set of pods on that same day, that gets you to the limit for the day. We're closer to it.
It makes it so you are more probable to get the limit on any given day.
Yeah, right.
And that, yeah. Which may...
In other words, even though he's got two licenses, he can't check for one day.
I realize that. But
it allows you to put more pods over to get to your limit.
To look, right.
But he could have two sets of pods over.
Right, you're right. And that's what I'm getting at. So really, what is called by agents... is actually higher than the 9%.
Yeah.
Because it's not being, you know, in those situations.
I
like
think that 9% is just the agent that takes the boat and reports
right.
Just under their name.
But I think there was some concern about being 9%, but I think what we're figuring out is it's actually a fair amount higher.
In other words, it could be half.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
A lot. It's fat. I didn't realize that. That's why I've learned something tonight. Down this end of the table, Mr. Graham.
Yeah, I'm still a little bewildered. They put a 9.3% number up there, and they got that number from some data. Now, listening to this gentleman, the way he turns his stuff in, his numbers are not in that data.
That's right.
Which I'm inclined to think that number is obviously wrong, and it's going to be higher.
Correct.
I'm not sure this gentleman down here if the report's the same way. If he does, then I know it's going to be higher.
It's going to be the
same. Two things are going on. We've got an administrative problem. The way we're handling this information needs to be done differently, completely.
Yeah.
You really get a handle on the agents and what is being landed for agents.
Yes.
And if that number is bigger than 9.3 on 120-some people, that's a staggering number.
It's a
staggering number.
Well, my single catch is going to come down also. If I don't have my
I'm
agent,
not worried about your number coming out. I'm worried about how high that number
actually
is.
Actually...
Yes, sir.
That might make it even greater because the orange will come out.
Nobody can make a living.
Hang on.
No, we're not arguing that. We're not arguing that.
We understand that.
I don't know.
We do.
Yes, sir.
Doug Jenkins, with Sherman Association. I've been listening to y'all all night.
Give us some wisdom.
All right. You got an agent, one agent. He has to fish on somebody's license, don't you? Well, what the hell's the matter? You got a crab license. That's a crab. You've limited the commission's limits to so many licenses. So forget it. Don't worry about it. You got a license V and V's. There ought to be V and V's with the state allows that many crabs. You make a whole lot of nothing out of something or something out of nothing. I don't know how to put it, but that's the way it is. But another thing is, some of these agents, which you all have not mentioned the whole night, I know some people have lost a husband, older people. They had a boat, and they had pots, and they didn't want to sell it because they could get more out of it by having an agent. And they live on Social Security about $750 a month. And this little crabbing during the summer helps them out. They're not family. They don't have a family member to use that agent. That's something y'all ought to consider.
It's certainly up more complex.
Worrying about somebody else catching a crab and you not catching one. That's pitiful.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Jenkins. Oh, good to see you, sir. Well, I think I've certainly had gotten a little education on the line. Do you want to mention anything? It's
no,
our crab expert.
Listening to Doug.
Does staff want to add anything at this point?
I'll agree with what Doug was, Mr. Jenkins was saying, that that's a part of this that hasn't been represented at all yet. There are some folks that do exactly like you said. They're using this as, you know, they hire an agent for the year. And they're not fishing it, but they have an agent who's doing the work, and a lot of them are, you know, older folks. I mean, we don't have this.
Have to make it.
Excuse me?
I said, I don't know how to make it.
Yeah. But there are folks that are doing that. So that's another business model in here. People have planned their income around having that agent. So eliminating it immediately is going to be a hardship for, we don't know exactly what the number is, but it's probably a fair number of those folks in that group. So that's something to consider. I mean, you know, that's one of the reasons why we considered having something like you couldn't have an agent for more than X number of years in a row. And by doing that, someone knows that, hey, next year I can't have an agent. Maybe it's time for me to sell this license and let someone else get in.
If you stop it where it is now, don't add none. You won't have a problem.
Well, we haven't had
it.
Yeah, we haven't had it. Well, it's been 125.
We were on this about 6 years ago. We were going to reduce it. Nobody's ever reduced it.
No.
Okay.
So this comes back to the, Doug, I think the woman you're talking about would be covered under a scenario where you say if you've used an agent any of the last 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and you were on that 2012 list, you can continue doing so. I also think that in 2 years, you should be required to have a commercial waterman's card.
Mm-hmm.
That does not put a hardship on anyone because they can go out right now and apply for that commercial waterman's card and be covered in 2 years.
And the older people that use it will be covered because they have one from the husband or the wife.
Yeah.
They can transfer.
They can transfer, yes. There's an exceptions for delay requirement pursuant with this based on scientific, economic, mm-hmm. biological, or sociological and hardship factors. Certainly that counts for you can transfer that waterman's card.
Mm-hmm.
But the real key I see here is it's an overcapitalized fishery. The only way you're going to get new people into the fishery that are on the waiting list is if the commission stops permitting the sale of permits.
Mm-hmm.
So when you retire your permit, if you're not transferring it to a family member, you're done.
I disagree with that because Mr. Jenkins just said that. So I don't have any children. I don't have no children. And I get sick, but I got a license. But my wife can't let nobody else use it, so she starves because I didn't have no children.
This is a system.
Just got there saying that. That's wrong.
Well, this
that's
is
wrong.
This is a system we've built, and that's part of the problem. We built a system that allows, you know, for licenses to be sold, and you know, people have bought licenses that cost them a lot of money.
Permits. Yeah.
Permits. They bought permits that cost them lots of money, and they basically say you can no longer transfer that when you want out.
How do you keep the fishery going if the license is gone when you die?
If the license is gone when you die, then the commission starts allowing people in based on the licenses going away and stop being used.
Mr. Nixon,
on a one-in, one-out basis.
Mr. Nixon, he's got to
isn't it in the regulation that the intent was that when a waterman wanted to retire or if he died,
that the license would be transferred, but it had to be sold with all its stuff. And we don't do that anymore. And nobody's ever tried to do it. And the licenses are traded back and forth just like commodities.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's become as a commodity. You're absolutely right.
But you don't have to buy a boat. You don't have to buy a rig.
And that was because people were selling a 12-foot skiff and 10 crab pots and saying, that's my rig.
It's a plank rule. You're basically selling a plank at that point.
It's not an easy answer. It's a complicated issue.
These are the discussions that we had when this licensing first started.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I know that, because I was the only waterman on the licensing resolution group that Taylor Murphy set up. And a lot of the waterman stuff ended up being an afterthought. But we set the regulations at the commission. You know, there was a set of guidelines. And the whole idea, all the discussions we had in all the committees at that time was that it was a way out for someone to retire and not be able to just get rid of their license, but be able to sell everything. Because if somebody bought your license, they were going to have to buy your boat, at the very least. But I don't know what happened to that either.
It's like the crab license was sold. People sold the license, wouldn't supposed to be getting back in it, but half of them had no license.
Yeah,
that wasn't nothing but a joke.
That was good.
How do we deal with that? How do we deal with that now?
I don't know. That's why we're having this discussion. There was some good ideas put forth tonight.
Mr. Diggs. Morris, pardon.
Say, could I take my commercial card, my crabbing license, and transfer it to you for the year, temporarily?
Can't transfer it to me. I work here.
But I'm just saying, using you as an example.
You
got to another person temporarily.
Yeah, as an agent.
At the end of the year, he comes back to me.
Yes, as an agent, yes.
Crab license, but not an arson license.
Say again?
Not as an agent.
No, you can't transfer. You can use me as an agent. You can't transfer.
Which is transferable, which makes that...
With the agent, though.
Right, but it's not a transfer. You're just having the agent, though.
But the agent does
you
not
give him
have
your
his own
license
card.
Right.
Which means he's not...
And at the end of the year, I get
him allowed to harvest and sell.
No, temporary thing.
I can go get some.
I don't know about temporary, but I know.
I don't think you can transfer temporary.
You can
make my agent.
No, that's the purpose of the agent.
If I want to take.
So why not do away with the out of state, out of country, and leave it kept like it is?
Because the state was doing a given driver's license now.
Well, they need to be arrested.
It's
a full time resident.
Yeah, the state law says if you live in the state, you must have a driver's license within 60 days. If you live in the state. Now, if that person puts down, they can get a driver's license now. I'm not sure how it works with,
All I can tell you is call the Mexicans, come down here to a meeting that has got agents, see them, and you can show up.
But, I mean, if they have residence in the state, I don't know where they have the residence, but we could look into that. I mean, I don't know how many of those are from others, Maryland or other countries. I have no idea.
I got 3 or 4 boats by me that's got them. There ain't nobody but Mexicans. And they got a Virginia driver's license. And they go to Mexico every month.
It's a complicated issue. Anybody got anything they want to try to push forward?
Maybe not push forward, but if you're going to go back and look at those out-of-state folks, one area that would be interesting to look is see how many of them are Tangier and Smith. I know they're different states, but they actually do function as one community, and I think there may be some cases there where it's basically a family member or a medical hardship, even though it is in a different state.
So, to be clear, you do not have to be a Virginia resident to get a waterman's card. You have to be a U.S. person. Is that something the agency has the authority to change?
I don't think we can change it, but I know we can charge. We can have a higher fee, out of state.
No, not much. We went all through that years ago. You cannot put anything on some out of state citizen that you don't put on the folks in your own state.
We tried that. We tried to bump it up real high, and it didn't
work.
You can do it a little bit, but when you get up to a certain point, they can't. We tried to do that with Maryland back in the 80s and came up way short.
Yeah.
say, was that 200 in for crab license?
That one.
On the waiting list.
Yeah, because that's how many were out of state, including
North Carolina or Maryland. So that's how many we had out of state last year, and that included North Carolina, Maryland?
North Carolina, Maryland. So if they had specifically an out of state license, they were included.
Okay.
So they
had a specifically an out-of-state driver's license. Right? So those are the people who had an out-of-state driver's license.
Which does not include someone who comes to the United States to work 6 months out of the year and lives in Virginia and gets a Virginia driver's license.
Correct. They have a Virginia driver's license.
Even if they have a Maryland license.
Could you show again your options for us that you guys kind of have been mulling over? I don't know these guys got. Stay as is.
And we also, you guys also added agents are required to have a card, commercial fishing card, which
makes sense.
Yeah, I think
in that one you made
have a commercial card.
So there's two ways. There's two ways I think you can handle a commercial card. Number one, if someone has previously had an agent, you waive that requirement for 2 years, and if someone has not previously had an agent, you don't.
You got 2 years to get it.
It means that you go down right now and put your $150 down or whatever it is, $200 down, and say, my son needs a license because he doesn't have one.
Yeah, well, why do we have 2 years anyway? Because it's 2 year wait period.
That's right. But that gives them the people the opportunity to be ready to be legal when it's required of everybody.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to make a motion.
Okay.
The motion I'm going to make is that we postpone discussion of this anymore for at least a year.
Cool.
And during that interim time, staff will do whatever they need to do to be able to separate the agent catch from the main harvester catch on reports. I don't know exactly what that method would be. What are you shaking your head about? You get paid every week.
We were hoping that.
The only way we know as an agent is if the agent solely with the harvester. As soon as you put a licensee and an agent on the boat, they're bound by one limit. So there's no way for me to tell which part of that limit came from the agent and which one came from, we'll call him the primary or the licensee. So there's no way to separate that out in the database. In fact, it even looks like there's two license holders on there because they're not reporting, in some instances, the only person is an agent. They're just reporting.
They put on that report the number of pots that they fished that day.
I'm sorry?
They put on that report the number of pots they fished.
Sure.
Mr. Graham?
So what was the 9.3 or 9.8?
The 9.3 is when you are reporting harvest solely as an agent. Then you are giving your commercial card to someone. And they are the only person on the boat with a limit and a license, and they are reporting for you. That would be that 9.3.
So it's safe to say that is a purely an agent situation.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. But in his situation,
we cannot quantify it. It's not
so
quantified.
The number 9.8 is not valid in terms of the agent or sub-agent landing number.
Even when you look at his situation, what part of that harvest is attributed to his bushel limit and what is better to eat. It cannot be parsed out based on our data, and I believe they can't parse out which crab came from whose pot.
Well, let's you guys hand up. We'll give
you a suggestion. I mean, I know you got to give and take, but when I would apply for an agent, I would just have the piece of paper, and I would give that license to my agent. Well, I know a lot of people that are aging out of license, say it's a peeler pot license, hard crab pot license, and they might have aged out their peeler pot license, but they're still hard crab.
You can't do that.
I know they can't, but technically they are. So if you made an agent for their license, they have to have both of them in their pocket. And, you know, there's a lot of people that still got their card and they're going to work.
The whole point of an agent is you can't be in two places at the same time.
I realize they do, and that's
where enforcement comes in. And with any law and regulation,
they don't enforce.
If you don't get caught,
yeah. Because somebody else on the vessel has another card,
and they're going to think twice about aging their license out if they know they can't do nothing else, can't go to work.
They already can't do. They already
can't do hard. No, they can do it. You need to change your code or regulation stating point blank. You cannot work on the water. Period.
just like you do when you put sanctions on
fishermen. You cannot operate underneath your licenses because you can't be in both of them.
But your license or permit.
Raccoon already held his license.
They're doing something else.
In other words, what he's saying is the agent's going to go way up on the crab. Instead of 9.3, it's probably 12-something.
Probably more than that. And the 90.7%, the orange bars, are going to be smaller, too, because the agent's harvest eats into that. The state cannot, we've been through this with Rob and Jack, and the state cannot say anything about you working on a boat as a helper or paid crew as a right-to-work issue unless you've gotten really in trouble and the judge said you can't even be on a boat. But it's got to be a judge that does that.
Well, the commission does that all the time.
No, the commission says, oh, the commission says you can't work as an agent.
No, the commission says it's not going to work if you have certain
violations. The commission can revoke your privileges.
Your privileges
include being a helper, operator, call man, anything on the water.
But that's for violation, for cause. You can't just do it in general.
Can the commission also do that for agents?
No.
Not unless you have revoking license and privileges.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Let me get back to the motion. They can't do this, and I'll withdraw it. There's no way that you can just split that.
I can
do it 50-50.
If on his license it's indicated, if on that report it's indicated there's an agent, and if there's a license holder on there, and the helper.
Well, why not? Why couldn't we require that the agent file under his name?
We could, but we don't have data from 2020 going forward.
It would just be starting now. I mean, we could split it 50-50. If that's the best we can do.
No, that's fine. We know.
I think it's better than nothing.
I think we've been doing this for a long time. Something needs to be done.
Fifth or sixth different meeting we discussed agents on.
I think it's probably
really
more than that.
That's my first meeting. I'm
years.
About 10.
Yeah, I don't
believe
we're
recording.
That's why I said
because
this discussion is going nowhere tonight.
Okay, hang on. Let's get back here. So your motion, you want to stay with it, or what are we thinking there, Mr. Nixon?
If there is, I'll withdraw it if they say this is impossible. I don't believe it.
I would suggest or submit that if you had an agent and a guy with a license, like this man, gentleman over here, he catches 25, 40, 30 bushels, whatever it may be, we just divide it in half.
We don't know if there's an agent on that boat.
He's telling you there is.
But there's no indication on the harvest report.
Could insert that?
Sure, but we would have to insert it starting this year.
Why can't it be required that the agents, that part of the catch has to be reported on the agent's owner's card?
I'm sorry?
Me too.
Most of them ain't going to have it on them. I'm telling you, they ain't going to have it.
Let's just have one person at a time.
Let
Mr. Nixon finish.
I'm still trying to figure out how a way that we can quantify what the agents are responsible for as far as harvest goes. And you're reluctant to do that. I don't understand that. Your attitude is you don't want to do it.
No.
Tell me I can't.
I don't think that's the case. I think it's just trying to tweak it out of the data, and do we have the information to do it is the question.
Well, I'm giving you 12 months to figure it out. The season hasn't even started yet.
No, you're giving them a month.
Hang on.
You know it's going to be more.
Could you respond to that, though, please, Adam? The idea of beginning this year and having it so that the agent is recorded in some fashion.
Sure. So if we were to add another field to our data sheets, we would essentially have to take our entire mandatory harvest reporting program, order all new forms, so you're talking at least $20,000 in forms and supplies alone.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying whoever is the holder of the card, the commercial card that the license is under, is responsible for reporting the agent's catch.
We do it now.
Doing that now.
Yeah, no, they're not. He's saying he's not doing it. He said he reported the catch on his car.
It says right there who are your helpers on the boat. And if they have a VMRC number, you write the number down.
Sure, but there's no indication on that if you are a helper with a VMRC ID number.
Yes.
If he's an agent, for seeking stuff.
Well, you can see that when you put it in your system.
I don't know who was actually on the boat. I don't know.
Excuse me.
If you're an agent, you don't report under your terms. You report under the casino. So I don't know if that lady was actually on the boat with you that day. Or the agent was actually.
Well, it says the name, and it should be in the report. It says the BMRC number, and that other person, that BMRC number, is not supposed to be doing anything else on the water.
Just because you're an agent doesn't mean you have to.
I don't know, I'm just saying every day after the report, but I mean both numbers, one's going to decrease, the other's going to increase, it's, you know, it's going to get exactly, exactly, the orange numbers are going to go down, the blue numbers are going to go up, yeah, we can look at this, but we're only going to have one year, the real effect of this, if it's not appreciated, well, the hell, we have licenses for 15 years or more.
But you got to also look
Okay, hang on.
That many more people. I mean, we could provide, the best we could do is provide a range. We could say 9.3, and then we could assume it all agent and inflate that and say, hey, somewhere between 9.3 and I'll show out 20%.
You can do that
now.
We
could give you a high range, and we could give you a low range, but it still won't get to probably what you're looking for.
So hang on, Mr.
I just asked a question. Everybody, they have to report the number of the pounds caught and the number of hot fish.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So it's pretty straight. I think it's straightforward if you just divide by the number of pots and subtract out the number of pots that are fished over what one person could have. That will give you a pretty good estimate.
But also, we can have that. I only fished 255 pots in the water, but now I can have 400 in the water that allows me to go to work 6 days a week.
So
you're soaking
it. 400 and then what's over 255.
Yeah.
Multiply that by a catch per pot and tells you
what. But what he's doing, though, is he can let them soak for 2 days and just alternate between pots. There is one mechanics question on this agency stuff. If he gives me his card and says I'm going to be, and if he puts the paper in and says I'm going to act as his agent, can I go back and say, oh, here you have your card back for the next 6 months, and then I'll just cover it for 3 months here during the middle of the summer? Okay. So that means that you have no way of knowing the waterman's card, who actually is the person who's got it, unless you cross-reference his report that's got a waterman's card number that doesn't match the name of his crew, and I'm not sure.
That's a high estimate. That's
yeah, and then on trips like that, I would say make it a 50-50 thing, and that would give you your highest. But I do have a motion I'd like to make.
Hang on, you're withdrawing your motion, and Mr. Cox has been patiently waiting. He had something he wants to say.
I don't see the big deal in how much the catch are. If we take away 50 licenses from the agents, let's say, okay, 50 of them are not going to do it anymore. There's still 50 licenses there.
Yeah.
There's still 50 crabbing licenses. I'm just using these numbers for example. So 25 of them, we're going to say half of them, will probably be sold or transferred. And the other 25 out of the 50, the people who had agents, they will probably continue to crab. So absolutely nothing's changed. Nothing's changed. You take 50 people, still show back up. I told you this from the beginning. You take away jobs and you give jobs. This is very tough. What they catch amounts to nothing, because that same catch is going to come right back. Only this young man here, he's not going to be able to catch his limit because he ain't got as many pots over for it anymore. That's the big issue here. Is the limit in what you can catch. That's the big issue. You're going to take away.
For people that are trying to be legal.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, you know.
This right-hand side, Mr. Burns.
You really want to know what an agent's catching? Like the first time I ever sent my reports in, I didn't put my wife's name. I put the agent's name and her number and what we caught. And I called and said, did I do it right? They said, no, you need to put the license holder's name. Mm-hmm. That's why you can't tell who's on the boat. You can write your agent's name if y'all would let us do it, and then you could get more accurate data. I think
Those landings have to be associated with a license holder. That's the problem.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, I did it the way you said, but I thought it should have been in their name at first. But you could get more accurate data that way if you switch that, I guess.
Pat, do you have some?
I have no words of wisdom at this point.
Again, this is something we've probably gone through five or six meetings. I know Pete suggested putting this. Anything that we did today would go in front of presumably the commission in June to be in place for 2021. So putting this off a year, now you're putting it in place for 2022. So just giving you a timeline, but if we're no further to, this is an issue that was brought to us by the committee. This isn't an issue that staff is bringing to the committee.
Right.
So we're really looking for the committee to delve into their problem, to solve this problem. We're not coming to the committee with this problem like with many of our other issues.
So the staff doesn't believe this is an issue or a problem, is what you're saying?
It depends on your perspective. Obviously, to Mr. George over here, it's a major problem now. You've got the folks that are, you know, using an agent. They don't think it's a problem. You know, that's it. And they're not really represented in this room today. And those folks have been, you know, their model is I put in my form, I get my agent every year, and I have some relationship with them, an arrangement, and they give me money.
Yep.
And I have income as a result. So they have a different, you know, it's, you know, there's a lot of other aspects of this, you know, folks that aren't residents or whatever the case may be. Those are things that we can look into. But we have, you know, people with different business models.
Is there any way you could just put a gap on it, just where it is now, and no new people come in at all? And is it once fall late, but you got to have a call official.
So, can I, Mr. Powers? Okay, I suggest that number one, you put in a regulation this year, sooner rather than later, that says in 2 years, you have to have a card to be an agent. That makes it fair for everybody. They can go down, pay their money, wait 2 years, and get a card. There's no paying, no buying a card from anybody, no transferring it from your cousin, nothing like that. Number two, you need to look before June, and we should probably discuss it again before then because that's when we can make the change. If we were to say, if you have used it any year in the last 3 years had an agent, and you were on the original 2012 list, you can remain on the list to have agents. Number three, certainly, and even if it goes over 125, I don't care. If you're a family member as a legacy issue, and I don't know how to put that in code or regulation, you should be able to have an agent. Number four, there should be something for temporary agents because that's really the reason this was here, and it shouldn't, and that shouldn't count against the big list. If somebody broke their arm and they need somebody for the next 4 weeks to work their gear or even just to go out tomorrow and pull their gear, and they're going to harvest the crabs out of the gear, there should be a way for them to do that. And I don't know what the right regulatory way to put that is. It's an emergency and it's a temporary emergency, and it should be something that's handled with a telephone call and a written, you know, you get a note from the teacher.
We do a lot of medical exceptions.
Yeah, but you know, it's a temporary agent thing and not for the whole season.
That's taken care of already. Would we say?
I don't think it's in regulation like that.
Though. Medical exceptions.
Medical exceptions.
Okay. What do you think about that, Pat? Is that something that...
Those seem like we can look into those. It seem like it would work. I mean, we have to look into some of those things, but it's seems reasonable to me.
How about the rest of the committee here?
I would make a motion because there's one thing that we can start the process on right away. The rest of it takes more data and knowledge, that is the two years to get, and then you have to have a waterman's card to get a permit or to work as an agent.
I mean, we didn't get to this point in 1 year. It might take a while to fix it.
If somebody is using an agent and a legitimate thing like your son or some grandson or whatever, you can't say you got to stop right now because of this. You got to give them a chance to get legal.
Yeah, it's legitimate that people are using agents now. It's not an illegitimate thing. No. I mean, it's a business.
There are fisheries that do not allow agents.
Sure.
Yep. Liney dogfish, long pot.
This
is not, you know, this is...
Okay.
But we need to come up with a way to phase this out somehow, I think. Okay. Except for the legacy family members.
Mr. Burns?
Is he saying the person acting as the agent now has 2 years, or the license holder can continue to have,
What I'm suggesting is that the person who is working as an agent, in 2 years to work as an agent, they have to have their own waterman's card, and it's not transferring a card, you're transferring the permit.
So you're just suggesting that staff comes up with some stuff for us to look at next time. We're not making anything.
I think that the two-year limit is something that needs to be done sooner rather than later, so that people are on notice that they have to do it. The rest of the stuff is staff needs to come back with us, and we need to work through it.
I don't think most people's help stays 2 years, or they just give them their license anyway.
That's what I wonder.
Can't find any help.
We may not have agents. We may not have them sticking around for 2 years.
That's why I have agents. I don't trust anyone to stay.
My point is that it is illegal to transfer your license temporarily to someone else.
Yeah.
It's against state code, and the agency's not supposed to do things that are against state code.
But on the other hand, Ty, if your agent has to have a license, it could be less likely that license holder is going to get an agent.
Yeah. I was just asking about clarification. I don't know.
Yeah.
So. Are you calling that a motion of some sort?
I'll call that a motion. Just the agent, or just the license.
We wrote everything in.
Commercial waterman's card. So that's the one motion we're going to have.
Okay.
Any second on that motion?
I'm not real sure of what he's saying.
What I'm saying is staff move forward right away. And only right away, because this way the person knows before the beginning of the crab season 2 years from now that he had got time to do it, to establish that at the opening of crab season in 2022, that to work as an agent in this fishery, I think it should be everywhere, but you can debate that with Finfish, that you have to have a commercial waterman's card.
So, in your name. So the agents that are doing it now can continue to do it, but you just have to apply for a card. Is that correct?
That's exactly what I'm saying. I don't think it is fair to tell someone in February that in a month when you're planning on starting to work that you can't because we've changed the rules on you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you give them a chance to comply with the rules by giving them the 2 years, they don't have to go out and spend a lot of money buying somebody's card. You don't have to transfer it. They just got to pay $150 right now, and they're ready to go in 2 years.
Gee, yeah, no.
I got a question for you. The amount of agents, are you going to make it to 90-some, 95?
This motion has nothing to do with that because we're not going to do anything about that till June. This is one so that we can get something so in March of 2000.
Because they're already in the
okay.
I got to say this.
Mr. Cox.
Doug still shot a place in my heart. So my wife got no kids. I ain't planning on getting no agent because I ain't planning on dying. But I might die. And I ain't got no agent. You know, I didn't get one. So now... the wife's got to figure out, I got to get me an agent. So she's got to wait 2 years now.
No.
She
just
has
to find somebody who has a waterman's card if it happens in 2 years.
That's not right. Most people got a waterman's card doing something.
It's illegal to transfer the waterman's card anyway.
She's got his card if he dies.
Yep. If you die, she can transfer your card to that person.
Oh.
But it would be
fine. She's got your card.
Yeah, she's going to transfer it.
But it would have to be a permanent transfer.
She's going to transfer to you.
They don't transfer cards.
They do a one-in, one-out.
They cancel your card and issue somebody another number.
The motion's on the floor.
With no second. No second, is that what we're saying?
I have not heard a second.
Okay. All right. The second is not going to go through.
So is a recommendation from the committee of how they want us to move forward?
I've got it.
Hang on, let's see. Do we have a motion? Do we have somebody who wants to move us forward? We've had a lot of discussion.
I'd like to see staff move us forward on the exact same things that you talked about to look into.
Okay.
And come back with some paperwork, with some ideas and suggestions that we could do. Because are you going to get that done for another year anyway? So
no, we got to get it done by June.
When the Woodruff Dredger survey results coming out, and any changes that we need to make seasons bushel-wise in response to a winter drift survey, this would be a very large undertaking to do those both at the same time, knowing this will not be in place until 2021 to the earliest, so maybe it would be best for us almost.
Yes, sir.
Back to the number of agents again. So right now we're at
125.
Last year we had 95
so far.
Plus.
95
active. At 95 active, we had 125
applied. We always have a full 125.
So basically, you know, I'm just going to stop this right now. Why don't we just go ahead and allow the number that we had last year, 125? Yeah. And then staff move forward something different than what we're doing. I mean, we're going nowhere. You know, we might as well even forget about this. I mean, it's pretty much a waste of time for y'all and for us, to be honest. We either need to move forward, do something different than we're doing, or forget about it. At this point, personally, I say forget about it. Because we've been doing this since before 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, probably a discussion back in 2008 when we had a problem with the original crab fishery.
2003 we talked about it.
2003 also.
Long time.
So, I mean, this is a lot of valuable time that you put into it. Plus time for all the members. We're obviously not going to achieve anything tonight. So what I'd recommend is keep it as it is, and maybe do something with the card down the road. How I feel. Here, plain and simple.
I'll second that motion.
All right, did you make that a motion, Mr.
He's just saying no action.
Well, I mean, you know, we might as well. We're not going to get anywhere. Too much controversy. I mean, too much staff. You know, you can't come up with anything that we're happy with, obviously, and we can't come up with anything that, well, we're all happy with. It's not going to fly, in my opinion. So, we got 125, and there's 90 some active. You know, if we drop it down to 95 active for 2020, I'm good with that. But if not, 125 is fine with me. It's, you know, any feedback from any of y'all?
It's a motion for status quo.
Yeah.
I do have a question from a just understanding the magnitude. How many active crab pot licenses are out there right now? Where active is substantial harvest, not just.
There's about 1,200, I'm going to round this off, about 1,250 eligible crab potters, about 850 active.
And active means not just two bushels
harvested, 1 pound.
Okay, and I would be curious to know how many have harvested enough to say $10,000 in earning or $5,000 in earnings, which I know is not a full-time job, but it's a good part-time earning.
We can get that way.
So that when we're looking at these numbers, we know that, okay, if it is 800 and this is 100, then it's just, you know, it's 10% kind of number. But if it's 400 that are really active, and then we've got 100 people here that are really active, because you imagine these people are being really active, then it is a substantial fraction of the fishery.
Okay.
All right. Well, do we have anything else to come before?
Johnny had something.
Johnny?
Yeah, I don't want to take too much time, but y'all spare me just a few minutes. In the last 10 years, the processing industry has faced several situations, both from a food safety standpoint and now from a regulatory body or a body that acts as an official
watchdog procedure. Wegmans Grocery Store, which I'm sure you all have heard of, Whole Foods you've heard of. I had opportunities to sell both of those companies in the last 10 years, and I've lost both companies because I didn't comply with these regulations that I'm going to talk about. First one was dealing with food safety. There's a couple different food safety programs out there that are being nationally recognized by the major big retail stores. BRC certification or SQF. Those are just sophisticated acronyms for a body that comes in that will basically do a third-party auditor, which will replace the retailer or the grocery store from having their own team have to come in and be responsible to do the legwork. It saves them money. Hey, if you just follow this association's lead and you do what they say, you're approved for us. You can supply us. You can be our vendor.
Mm-hmm.
I walked away from Wegmans 10 years ago because when I looked into this, it was going to cost me probably $50,000 to get everything up and antiquated to be satisfactory. And looking at it, I said, you know, they're only buying the high-end crab meat. I don't have any problem selling my crab meat, high-end crab meat, somewhere else. I know I'm not going to get any more money for it, so you know what? I'm going to walk away. And they walked away from me. So last year, I had an opportunity to take on Whole Foods. And Whole Foods has walked away from me this past year because they're looking at the sustainability issue of our resource. Not so much sustainability. They look at sustainability, look at habitat, they look at everything around the fishery, okay? So this Monterey Fisheries is out in California. It's an aquarium. But they got a seafood watch program that they started back in 1999. And they basically look across the globe and they monitor all the seafood from around the globe, the health of it, how it's captured, any bycatch, any habitat being degraded or so forth. They want to make sure that they make all the public and any retailer or restaurant or anybody that wants to follow this program as guidance today, they're saying this is where we ought to be buying our seafood because these areas are doing it the right way. There's no not catching dolphins, they're not catching turtles, they're not catching pregnant female crabs, they're not destroying the bottom, this, that, and the other. Right. Well, Virginia didn't meet the model with this Whole Foods, with this outfit, because Virginia was catching an exorbitant amount of terrapin turtles with no just reason for escapement, just carte blanche, you guys are catching turtles, you haven't tried to fix the problem of catching turtles. So we blacklisted Virginia off the list for buying crab meat. In fact, I'll read it to you. It says, blue crab caught with trot lines in Maryland's Chesapeake Bay waters is the best choice. And it's a good alternative from Alabama, Delaware, Maryland's Chesapeake Bay waters, and New Jersey, Delaware Bay waters. Avoid list. Do not buy U.S. blue crab from Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Carolina, South Carolina, Texas, and Virginia's Chesapeake Bay waters. Okay? So Maryland got a pass and Virginia did. Now, after further investigation, because I was always under the premise it was about the sponge crab. They haven't got over the sponge crab, but as it turned out, it wasn't the sponge crab. It was the turtle. Okay? And the reason why Maryland has got a pass on the turtles is because Maryland doesn't allow crab potting in the tributaries. It's all trot line. Well, the trot liners don't catch turtles. The other reason why I made a pass in Maryland's waters is because the recreational fishery now in Maryland is required for them to have escapement funnels or whatever in their traps for recreational harvesting in the Maryland waters. So I just found out today that Virginia now has got a recreational pot license that now has the turtle escapement things or a non-escapement, and the license fees are structured differently. If you buy it with it, I guess it's cheaper. Do the right thing, we're going to cut your break on the fee,
to address the turtles. So, not knowing that coming in, I thought, you know, we need to start the discussion about what we can do, the industry, to address the turtles. And obviously, the public, with what they've done, has started to address it. But it's not going to address, that is not going to address it enough to probably get us to move away from this blacklist that we're on right now. You know, it's not shutting me down, but my point today is to make everyone aware around here, that's here, that we're living in a different time and environment now. The mindset of the consumers and the buyers and the purchasers is all about this type of movement. This is the way it is. They want to buy from sustainable, clean, good actors. And right now, we're not looked favorably in this people's, you know, jurisdiction and how we're harvesting our crabs, because we're not doing enough, in their opinion, to help the turtles.
So, give you a little bit of information on that. You can give me a paper right now. So I've been part, there are a couple of different bodies that actually are legal in terms of certifying fisheries as sustainable. And I just went through that actually with Louisiana Bluegrass Fishery. And it's a group based from Audubon and so on. And we just went through this process in the last 3 years where we certified the bluegrass fishery with a couple of issues, and now we fully certified them this year. But I can tell you that based on my experience with Louisiana Fishery, that group is not doing a good job in terms of the full assessment. And I can tell you that from what I just went through, the Virginia Fishery would, I think, fairly easily pass certification. And when you're talking about turtles, you're probably talking primarily about terrapins, which, you know, we don't have a requirement to have the skate gap and so on. So if you wish, I mean, I could work with you on that. It does cost money to have the group actually come in and do a thorough job, but they are fully certified now. And the oyster fishery is not, but they're Louisiana, but the blue crab fishery is. And we covered everything, ecosystem consequences, everything across the board. So I think if the state commission chooses to do so, I think you could basically hire a group like that. And what they do is they'll bring in a team of assessors. I was one of the assessors, and there was three of us. And we went in and evaluated all elements of the assessment. It's like about a 80-page report to evaluate every single aspect. And it's globally recognized. So that's something you can do.
Well, you know, with all the effort that we've done, all the painstaking effort that we've done over the last 20 years to help the blue crab population, it's just sad to think. Even more so that Maryland is getting a green light and we're not. And we're sharing the same bay, the same ocean. We've done all these things together.
The issues with the terrapin, it's not the commercial fishery.
It's a recreation.
Remember, but we did a study, a two-year study on this, and we found very few terrapins. I think out of all the Douglas involved in that and so on, we caught, I think, we found two terrapins in commercial crab ponds. I think the biggest problem is just homeowners.
Yeah.
Who would have to leave them out over the week and they kill the turtles.
Well, maybe we need to reach out to Monterey and explain to them what
we've
done now. Maybe that will get them off our back.
Well, but if you get the certification from this body, you can say, hey, this is an independent body. Boom. We've certified this fishery, and then they can do that.
How can
I've been involved partly with that, and that is a... They just do a cursory view, look at the different fisheries. It's not a thorough evaluation.
So let's fill you in a little bit. I've been involved with this since 2014 in two states now. It's following me up here, and I don't like that. They did a terrible job with Georgia's, with the Georgia evaluation, and I tried to fight it with their 2014 report. I literally got on the phone, was calling the editor, and I said, you cannot publish this. It's wrong. I provided new information, told them what we were doing, and it still came up with the same result. The latest one modified it even greater, so now we've got, out of 16 fisheries, 9 of them are to avoid. avoid the fishery because of, and primarily they rated it on four categories, five categories, three of which, if you didn't have, if you didn't do something to protect terrapins, you were going to fail. So right away, if you don't have, you know, for the management section, well, if you don't have regulations in place to protect terrapins, you failed. If you didn't protect terrapins, which was another category, you failed. And then it was a protected resource and bycatch category. Obviously, if you're catching terrapins and not protecting them, you failed. So right away, what they did was, I agree with Rom totally. I tried to fight this. You know, I even called the folks in this one and said, look, this is wrong. And it's the problem was, you know, getting people aware of it ahead of time. And when in my old job, I was screaming bloody murder about this, and I couldn't get anybody. Everyone's like, so what? Well, they're probably going to have the same issues. I mean, it's what we can do is things like what Rom said. I'm all for writing a letter. I'm all for getting – I tried to get the other states involved with this too, saying this is affecting us all. You know, getting this, you know, getting the heads of each, you know, Maryland DNR, BMRC, you know, North Carolina DMF, to basically get together and write a letter to Monterey, you know, Seafood Watch and say, we disagree with these findings. And they say they update them every 3 to 4 years. Well, you know, you need to do it now. And what they're doing is it's a cursory look. They're having interns do most of the work. All they're doing is internet searches. They try to call people in the natural resource agencies. If they can't, they do what they can find, and that's it.
Well, Chris had something.
Yeah, just one, I agree with the comments from both Pat and Rob. Taking issue with several of Monterey Bay ones as well. Glad other folks have been in that fight. So, one thing I will bring up, and I don't know if you might have any awareness of this, but a couple years ago, the Marine Stewardship Council, which is another certified body, looked into several species in the bay. And I don't know how far that got, but I'll contact the person at MSC that I work with fairly often and see where that process is, because there was some money put away to look at striped bass, blue crab, summer flounder, and a couple other ones in the bay. I don't know where that ended up, but I'll look at that.
Ron.
So the MSC is the other, they're basically two major certifying bodies. One is MSC, the other is the one that I consulted with, Global. Yeah. One, and I think you can basically go either one, but it's not as, I mean, if they're looking at blue crab, they're not doing a full assessment.
No, this is a very first crab. It takes time.
I think we need to move forward on something like this. I mean, we have a product here that we put a lot of time and effort into as individuals in the state. We need to, we can't lag behind.
Yeah, just to give you an idea, just something this morning, we talked exactly about this morning at the fishery resource grants. They were talking about doing this for oysters, and MREG is what it's called. They were going to charge $50,000 for the oyster fishery. So it gives you an idea of what it would cost. And they just come in and they evaluate your data.
$60,000.
$50,000. $58,000. Was it
58?
Okay. $58,000. So there you go. But it's one of those tough things because they market it well. They put it out there. They're not willing to change it. And I don't mind going on the record that I'm furious about it in two states now. I mean, it's just ridiculous that how irresponsible they are with what they put up there.
But you got major retailers following.
Exactly. You know, they have no concern how this impacts the industry.
Yeah.
And it's
can we do something? Do you think that where can we find the $58,000? Is that something that would
that'd be tough? That'd be kind of tough. I mean, it's
Yeah.
Well, the grants, I guess I can't talk about that one yet, right? You might be able to find a grant. You know, you'd have to find the right grant that would be willing to fund.
That's not a lot of, I mean, maybe going through CMET, through the joint.
You may be able to through C-Grant.
By the partnership program, something
yeah.
like that.
Especially if you got some seed money from the commercial fund.
Yeah.
You think you all could take a look at that and come back?
We could try to take a look at it and see what we can come up with. I mean, it may be, you know, I would assume that the oyster industry is on the same, you know, it's the same scale as crabbing, so it's probably going to be about the same price as what I guess.
Who was it in that meeting today who was talking about $250,000 for somebody to do a study, like that certification?
Is that the MSC? Maybe the MSC was that much
yeah,
more.
Yeah, the MSC and the one I consulted with, SAI, the global one.
Bob Fisher was in there with us today. We were discussing this.
Five-year effort that has three assessors working, not, I mean, it's like 2 weeks for each assessor, but it's not a simple process. So you have to weigh that. In fact, I could contact the group and see how much would it take, what would it cost to have a full assessment certification process.
And the process of that is different. All I would be doing is if we got that approved, it would be like saying to Monterey, well, we don't know why you're doing this. But their reasons are totally different. I mean, they were clearly jaded towards terrapin turtles in their evaluation.
And you wouldn't be. Incidentally, this is about crabs, not necessarily crab meat. So it's implying for crabs and crab meat.
Okay. Yeah. It's the industry as a whole.
Have you had a discussion with anybody that would, if this was full recreational instead of an option license, would that satisfy these folks? Of course, it got to be all
I didn't realize we were doing something on a recreational effort to address the terrapins, but I would think anything like that would help appease these people.
I'll tell you what they did in Georgia. They said we had nothing, and I said, well, we just had a program. We donated 2,000 terrapin excluded devices and how to put them in to everybody up and down the coast. And they said, well, that's nice. I said, we'll change the score. No, they didn't change anything.
Well, I understand North Carolina might be pursuing legal activity against them because they're really upset.
It'd be an interesting thing. I mean, I wish this report came out last year. And I know you had called, and we shared some emails back and forth, but we didn't hear much else from anyone else. And I know in my previous job, I felt like I was the only person screaming and yelling about it, and I knew how important it could be. And if the committee wants me to write a letter or talk to my counterparts in the other states and see if we can do a joint letter to them and just saying we disagree with this. I mean, I couldn't even find their report online today. I had to find it on some terrapin website. So, you know, the full report, all they had was, the bad things, huh?
I have it saved.
Okay.
I was looking at the report today. They mentioned some of the states that were a void did have voluntary programs that maybe they donated BRDs. We incentivized it by offering the cheaper license. It sounds like what they're looking for is regulation.
Just the fact that you do it, voluntarily as a recreation fisherman, you got to prepare for it.
Yeah. Well, can we pursue the idea of the accreditation with the group that Lipschitz is talking about?
We can try to look in that, and if you want me to get together with the other states and see. I'm assuming Maryland's not going to really be interested in doing much.
It's the future. I mean, consumers are becoming more conscientious all the time. Yes, sir.
I remember I had a doctoral student years ago who worked on this, and the BRDs and so on, tried to get things going voluntarily, but it didn't work. And I think the main problem is going to be with the homeowners, the recreational licenses. And I think if you just talk to somebody, well, if you can impose a regulation for the homeowners who have those two crab pots, they're the ones who have to have the BRD excluder devices. We have data, 2 years of data, that not mean that it is not necessary to remove the crab.
Right.
It's what's happening along the shoreline. And I don't see why you can't impose that. In fact, somebody like Ace Hardware can put the BRD right in the crab trap that they're selling for an additional couple bucks. And
except for
the tough part about that is that regulation is in state code, and that's why it took this act of General Assembly to do it 2 years ago.
But that regulation could be in regulatory code, not just in state code. It's in state code because it's part of the crab pot license.
I agree.
The five pot license. Whereas these are the two pot non-licensed crabbers that Ron's talking about. And my big concern with it is Doug Jenkins brought in one. And he brought in a crab, and he said, see, this nice big crab can't get in. And that's one of my problems.
Well, so we also did a study on that, and we found that it was a very small reduction. In fact, it was triggered a lot by Douglas saying that. We found a very small reduction in crab weight that comes out of a crab pot that has a BRD versus not.
But it's those really big crabs are the ones you want to catch.
and I'd pay a lot at a restaurant.
Well, but it would depend. See, you could put a regulation. You could put the regulation in where it's paraffin and habitat. And we could do a quick, some sort of habitat suitability for where terrapin habitat is, so that's where it's required. When you go farther up in muddy areas and so on, that's not where you have as many as terrapin and so on.
Okay, well, can we pursue some of these actions then and come back to us next time? I think the terrapin issue is certainly one that's going to need to be addressed over time.
It's ironic, too, that in the terrapin state that they're wiped out the terrapin up there already. They're okay.
Yeah.
Make a motion to adjourn.
Okay. Well, I have one. This meeting is at 4 o'clock, and although it imposes something on me personally, I'm more concerned for this meeting and FMAC. One of the big complaints that historically has always happened, and it happens probably two or three times a year at a commission meeting, somebody comes up and says, you know, this meeting's during the day, I work, I can't make it down here during the day. And it's the same thing for the audience, maybe not so much this committee as much as FMAC, that these meetings need to be held in the evening because that's when the public can attend them.
Well, you say that, but I mean, people from coming from afar, it's not but so much different, you know what I mean?
I've heard people complain over the years that we got here at 10, 11 o'clock too.
Right.
And we need to come here earlier.
We're not going to be able to win with that because there are some folks. But FMAC, I could see because it's a larger audience, it's a more recreational audience. I could see that we may have to go with a later time. It seems like our shell SMAC has been meeting at 4 o'clock for years, from my understanding. They meet pretty early. It's up to the pleasure of the committee. If they want to meet at 4, that's fine. You know, if they want to meet at 6, we'll do that too. We don't really want to go any later than that. But, you know, we're trying to be sympathetic to everybody because we do have people coming from very far away and we have other people that are having to work.
So. 5 o'clock.
That's more reasonable.
I know I got here late, but there was discussion about attendance too. I think it would be helpful if we could try to put these meetings out. I know you may cancel a bunch of them, but if we could have a calendar a couple months in advance, that would be really helpful because I think a lot of times what's happened in the last couple of years especially is we schedule one of these 10 days or 2 weeks out, and a lot of us either commercial guys can't find someone to cover their business that evening or other folks have other meetings and things like that are on the schedule. So if you put
I will tell you as chief, I do not want to have a meeting the day before a commission meeting anymore.
Sure. I understood that. But I will say at 4 today, at 4, this is the first time this table has been full in my tenure here.
One of the problems at 5 o'clock, you run into a lot of traffic.
Yeah.
4 o'clock wasn't so bad then. You get here at 5 o'clock, you get a mess.
Yeah. A number of years ago, we used to always kind of meet like the Monday before commission meetings.
Yeah.
That tended to work, I think, actually pretty well.
We're going to try to get more distance between the commission meeting because the staff, it's really hard on the staff, too, because they're having to basically come here and do a presentation tonight and maybe do something totally different the next day.
Yes.
The only problem with that is going to be when the winter dredge survey results come out, we try to make them – that's probably going to be our next meeting, and that's going to be – we're told results are coming out this day. We're going to try to make it as close to that day as possible so this committee hears it first. So the next meeting may not be able to work on planning ahead, but it's something we can probably look into for future meetings.
In the past, I think we were doing the Monday the week before the commission meeting, not the Monday before.
Well, we got to have it last year. We all opposed it. There were certain people that liked having it the night before, but.
And I know it was before your time, but this meeting and FMAC was historically at 7 up until about 5, maybe 8 years ago.
I see a bunch of people grimacing over that. I mean,
well, it was. That's
We'll stand adjourned status quo for the meeting time for right now.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right,
thanks. Very quickly,
one last thing.
1 second. I just wanted to introduce that two new students, graduate students, who are going to be conducting research on blue crab that's relevant to this committee and will unlikely lead to new regulations. So, new doctoral student, Callan Iman, he's going to be working on the value of all the different nursery habitats, whether it's marsh, seagrass, and so on, so the blue crab. We have never really done a comprehensive look. We have new habitats like red crab, oyster reef, and so on. And then Alex Schneider is going to look at the effects, the probable effects of climate change on blue crab, reproductive efforts, and so on, and timing of reproduction, and so on. And we'll probably come back to you, actually, anybody who might have any records of the timing of, say, the feeder run, and so on. That's going to try to draw on all sorts of data from the trawl survey, dredge survey, and some of you. So, anyway,
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's nice to see some young people involved in the industry's efforts, for sure. All right, so...
We had one question.
Yes, sir.
I already called about it. Did y'all put any thought into what I called you and asked you about March 1st, if we could switch it?
We put some thought into the answer for this year. Okay.
All right.
I made a motion on it last time and it failed.
Hmm?
Remember, I talked to Crab Bottom earlier, I made a motion on it last time and it failed.
Yeah.
Discuss it later, but he said it didn't fall.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. We're standing adjourned.